It's time for Twit This Week in Tech. I'm back, and we've got a great show. We're going to talk about Apple, their amazing revenue. They had an incredible quarter and celebrate the 20th anniversary of the launch of the original iMac. It was on this day in 1998. Cambridge Analytica is out of business or not. We'll talk about paying for privacy and a new business idea. I'm calling it Steak Jobs. It's all coming up next on Twit.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Twit, This Week in Tech, episode 665, recorded Sunday, May 6th, 2018. Konnichiwa. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/twit2. And by FreshBooks, the ridiculously easy-to-use cloud accounting software helping small business owners thrive. Try it free for 30 days at freshbooks.com/twit. And by Casper, a sleep brand that continues to revolutionize its line of products to create an exceptionally comfortable sleep experience, one night at a time. You can save $50 towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/twit and using the promo code TWIT at checkout. And by WordPress. Reach more customers when you build your business website on wordpress.com. Plans start at just $4 a month. Get 15% off any new plan purchase at wordpress.com/twit. It's time for Twit This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the latest tech news. I want to thank Becky Worley for filling in for me last week. And the week before, was it Jason or Father Robert, right? Father Robert Ballester for filling in. I'm back, and I have assembled a fabulous panel for my return, starting with Ms. Ashley Esquetha. Great to have you.
Hi, friends.
From CNET. And I, as I learned from your Instagram feed, a former professional gamer.
Yeah, my former life.
So I got to know more about that. What is, like, you made money doing that?
I wouldn't say I made money. So I got signed to the Global Gaming League before it was, I think, what it is now. Wow. Or what it became now. It was the very first iteration of GGL, and I got signed for a one-year contract to play Unreal Tournament. I know that they were kind of looking for women gamers, and it was me and another girl whose handle I think was Wabi Sabi. I'm pretty sure that
I remember her. She was great.
Yeah, she's great. And so,
love Wabi Sabi.
Enough, like, that stint in Global Gaming League led to my very first job in games journalism, because I was interviewed as a pro gamer for Play Magazine.
There you go.
And they liked my answer so much that I was offered a job. So they were like, do you want to just be an associate editor? And I was like, yes, that sounds like the best thing ever. So that's how I started in games journalism, which is pretty cool.
I'm just going to pull up the picture of you that you posted on Instagram, if I get to it, of you.
Leo, you're obsessed with this picture.
I love it. Well, you know, you're kind of cute. This is what you said 19 years ago. But the thing that I'm really obsessed with is the opening act for Jane's Addiction.
It was really weird. It was like, it was a tournament that happened right next to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland, and it was some sort of weekend festival. And so they put on this exhibition match where a whole bunch of us were on stage. There was, like, I think 8 of us on stage, and we all played a couple of rounds of a death match for Unreal Tournament. And so everybody's out there waiting for Jane's Addiction to come on, and here comes these losers, like, playing Unreal Tournament.
You don't ever want to be the opening act for any big band.
No,
but
no.
They didn't boo you, though.
No, everybody was very supportive. And I will say, I have to give credit to the people of Cleveland for not completely booing us off the stage. I appreciate you.
Did you? I mean, you have to come out and go, hello, Cleveland, when you come out, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Of course.
Hello, Cleveland.
Good night, Cleveland.
Cleveland. Okay. Aunt Pro, it's also here. It's great to see you once again, Aunt. Thank you for following my Instagram feed as I wandered Japan. You're the only person who liked anything I did, but I appreciate it. Thank
that
you.
Just makes it sound like I'm a stalker.
Yeah, he stalked me. He basically stalked me all the way through Japan. No, I really appreciate, because Aunt's a great photographer, and I really appreciated your feedback. And I noticed, though, you didn't say anything about this picture I brought back. This is literally a product in Japan, the Sharp EL-428. Right about the same time Ashley is playing video games for a living, this came out. It's an abacus and
that
a calculator.
Thing is awesome. Incredible.
I saw this at the Tokyo Edo Museum, City Museum. That's real. Isn't that wild?
That thing is awesome.
Like abacus.
That's way better than my TI-1795 that I used to have.
Oh, man. They said they had weird stuff in Japan, but this proves it. Also with us, it's great to have you, Micah Sargent, senior editor of Mobile Nations. It's great to have you once again. Micah filled in for me on iOS today. And then you filled in before that for Megan Maroney on iOS today. So,
yeah, good times.
Nice to have you. Welcome.
Happy to be here.
Anything happened while I was gone? I was not following the news at all. I saw some dim things about Elon Musk insulting an analyst on a conference call. I saw Apple. I was actually watching with interest because I have to say, I'm going to stop following the financial news because there was, for the last 2 or 3 weeks, people have been saying the iPhone X is a flop. You're going to see the supply chains analysts. Everybody said the iPhone 10, it's not selling. And Apple comes out and said, yeah, actually, it sold pretty well. In fact, it was the number one smartphone in Q1 in the U.S. And by the way, we made a little money. Another record quarter for Apple. Well, I'm starting to realize that when you read these, you know, stories about Apple not selling iPhone 10s, it's probably short sellers, right? Trying to depress the stock or something?
That's one of the theories there, that how much those things sort of interfere. And it's fascinating. You know, I end up transcribing these financial calls for iMore. And so sitting through and sort of hearing these things as I'm typing them out furiously and getting those all put together, it's like, oh, you sort of check off different boxes in your head. Oh, yeah, we saw the story about how this was failing or this was failing. And then Tim Cook just sort of quietly and very calmly reveals that the iPhone 10 sold incredibly well and Apple's doing well here and here and here. It's incredible how they how much there's differentiation, I think, between the financial area and then sort of what Apple ends up announcing.
Yeah, I never liked Apple rumors, but that really can lead you astray if you start to, as we did, I think, saying, oh, maybe the iPhone 10 is not a success. And obviously,
isn't it always the case though with the financial analysts? They seem to have broader expectations regardless of the company, not just Apple, just most people in general.
Yeah. Revenue up 14% year over year on the iPhone. That's, I guess, a gain. That sounds like a gain. Device sales. Now, part of the reason the revenue is up because it was a much more expensive phone. Device sales were also up 3% year over year. Quarterly down 38%, but you expect that. This is the Q2 for Apple. This is not their big selling quarter. This is the quarter following the announcement of the phone. Mac sales down, and some people attributed that to the really horrible keyboard choice that Apple made on the MacBook Pros. I would. 3% drop in Macs sold. It may also be that people are waiting for the next Mac Pro or something like that. Mm-hmm. What's really interesting is that services have now eclipsed iPad and Macintosh. In fact, service revenue, $9.2 billion, was bigger than the two combined. It is now Apple's number two revenue generator. That's Micah, so that's apps in the App Store and Apple Music and iCloud. Is that the three things that contribute to that?
I believe so. That's those are at least the ones that they certainly touch on. Especially Apple Music sort of takes the front lead there, and they always talk about the App Store selling really well.
That's
and,
where they make the most. I would imagine the bulk of the money.
I think Apple Pay falls in there too.
Apple Pay.
Micah,
yeah.
Do you think Apple Pay is one of the things that is sort of a quiet Trojan horse of an earner, because it feels like more and more people are jumping on Apple Pay, and then, you know, they get a small percentage of whatever gets charged from card companies. So that's got to be exactly over time. Correct. I would imagine that's like a real nice chunk of change for them.
I could see that coming. I mean, it's because it's not so user facing that it is sort of the secret thing, because we sort of see Apple Pay as just this, oh, I hold my phone up, it does this thing. Where does the money come from? But yes, Apple is getting a little bit of a pull in that. And we've got, especially in China, the transit systems are now getting involved with Apple Pay. And I'm not sure if there's any financial gain in that, but I mean, that's a huge thing. So we continue to hear about them announcing, oh, you know, Apple Pay is available here. It's available here. It's available for these different things. And I think we're going to continue to see that grow as a real earner for them in terms of services.
Yeah, that must be a huge win for them to own the, I guess that's a touch to pay for the underground in China and things like that, and buses and so forth. That's got to be huge.
Make it so easy.
Yeah.
I always have my phone out for everything. So it's like, I mean, just in general, anything that's tap to pay with my phone just makes life so much easier. And it's like, they get a cut of that every time. That's crazy.
It's funny, in Japan, I didn't see a lot of that. They were still swiping cards in a lot of places. But most places in Japan, it's cash.
Really? That's interesting.
Japan is
cash still rules.
Yeah, Japan is such an interesting country because it's both in the future and in the past simultaneously. Mm-hmm. There's still a lot of cash going on.
It took a long time for them to adopt smartphones too, right? There was a lot of flip phones there for a long time.
Yeah, because they had that iPocket or whatever they called it, that was really a full service. It was a computer in a phone.
Yeah, they loved it.
Yeah.
Like, that was a huge deal there.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't see a lot of iPhones in Japan. However, I see nothing but iPhones here in the United States. Clearly a big success. So much so that Apple has announced also that they're going to buy back $100 billion worth of their shares. People were wondering, what is Apple going to do with their giant cash trove, almost $270 billion at last count? And I think there is somebody sitting in a vault somewhere, like Scrooge McDuck, counting it.
It's a dragon. It's an actual dragon.
Yeah, they bought an actual dragon and that guards the money. All the money.
It must be a rather large.
Yes,
Smaug horde. They are going to spend some of it buying back stocks. And that is actually good news for shareholders. In fact, Warren Buffett seems thrilled. Warren Buffett announced at their Berkshire Hathaway annual meetings that they're going to buy even more Apple. They purchased 75 million shares of Apple during the first quarter. So they obviously, the Oracle of Omaha is not yet convinced that Apple is done. He sees a lot more growth. He says the $100 billion, I'm delighted to see them repurchasing shares. I love the idea of having our 5% or whatever it is. Oh, come on, Warren. You know exactly what it is. 5% or whatever it is. Maybe growing to 6 or 7% without laying in a dime. That's what buybacks do for current shareholders. It's the reverse of dilution, I guess, concentration of the value. So that's Berkshire Hathaway has $44 billion worth of Apple stock, 240 million shares.
Man.
And by the way, that was really good news for Apple. Tim Cook, the stock price when Berkshire Hathaway announced that went up, and Tim Cook said, I'm thrilled that Buffett is a major investor. I'm thrilled.
I'm
thrilled. 5%. That's a huge stake.
Jeez.
Huge stake. That's kind of amazing.
I also saw where Buffett said that he was wrong about Google and Amazon and he didn't invest in them.
A shareholder asked him, they have this annual meeting in Omaha and people come. It's kind of a hoedown and very friendly. A shareholder said, because Bill Gates is in the audience, he's good friends with Warren Buffett. He said, well, Warren, how come you buy all this Apple? You've never bought Microsoft. And Buffett said, well, I didn't buy in the beginning because I was stupid. And I don't buy it now because I'm friends with Bill. And I feel like people might take it the wrong way. Which I thought was interesting.
Of course.
Yeah. But he does say Google, he didn't buy Google stock because, or Amazon stock. He said he didn't buy Amazon stock because Amazon is a miracle, and I don't bet on miracles.
Wow.
Like, Amazon's success is I guess a one-off, like an, and it's true. I mean, you look at it and you go,
but the thing is, you can't knock him. He usually knows what he's talking about. So
he didn't diss Amazon. He just said, it's not the kind of thing I invest in. He did diss, and so did his partner, cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin.
Oh yeah.
Saying it's like gold. It isn't a producing investment. And I only invest in producing investments, not investments that the price is determined by merely by what people are willing to pay for it, which I thought was interesting. Well, and he also said there are a lot of kind of shady characters involved in Bitcoin, and they didn't like that. That I think his partner was even more dismissive of cryptocurrencies, calling them.
Yeah, right about the same time the GPU pricing started to dip back down.
You can actually get a video card at a reasonable price now again.
Wow.
Which pisses me off because it's, you know, just last month when I spent money for mine.
Really? How much did you, for that thing behind you right there?
Yeah, for that monster behind me.
What did you get? You know,
I overspent on it. I have a GTX 1060 6GB.
Well, let's put it this way. You could have spent more.
True.
Right?
True.
Mm-hmm. Dare I ask how much you paid for the 1060?
I think it was almost $600 when I got it.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. I was pissed.
Because you had to have it, right? You couldn't wait.
I have to have it because Lightroom and After Effects and all of that, they need.
Got to have it.
That rendering, you know?
Yep.
Gotta have it. Well, I've crashed my Windows machine, so I apologize.
Oh, it's not just me having issues.
A sudden delay in the show. Edge didn't like. You know,
the machines are hungover.
Oh, maybe that's it.
That's what it is.
Maybe that's what. Or Becky Worley did something mean to me. wow. What is happening here? It's probably the spring update. Anybody got the 18.03 for Windows 10? Anybody installed it yet?
I have not.
Don't. This is actually, you know what? This isn't even, this is a Surface, a Microsoft product, and I don't even have 18.03 yet, and I seem to have completely died. So I shall reboot my computer.
I've been trying to watch and see what all the reports are for people that have installed it, but I'm not hearing anything just yet.
I haven't had any problems. On the other hand, it's not much of an update. I mean, it is and it isn't. I don't, you know, from the point of view of the user, I don't think you're going to see a lot of changes.
You know what I want to see with this, though?
What?
If you have a Windows laptop and you're doing what you do. Seriously, my dog wants to run up here now with his little bell.
Hello, doggy. Hello.
Hello, dog. Hello.
Hello, puppy.
But you have a Windows laptop and you're working, doing whatever you want to do, and you decide to just close the lid, step away for a few minutes, and come back, open the lid. It refuses to let you log back in without doing a forced shutdown because hibernate or sleep or whatever that feature is decided to just bork on you.
Yeah. Well, this is borked. Ugh. And they don't put reset buttons on PCs anymore, so now I have to hold. And I know like this is a bad thing to do. Like an animal, like a savage, hold the on-off button until it gives up. It's
just
not working.
Cruel.
Sad. It's really sad. It's
choking it out, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
choking the life out of your computer.
Oh, no. It's not. Even that's not doing anything.
Oh, no.
I got to do the bad thing now.
Oh, man.
I do it all the way.
It's
so cruel.
I unplugged it. That is cruel.
I can't believe what I just saw.
I'm an animal. You're an animal. So this all makes me nostalgic for the Macintosh. Today, May 6th, the 20th anniversary of the Macintosh. We'll celebrate as soon as... But I'm going to take a break while my computer reboots. We'll celebrate in just a little bit. Great to have you, Aunt Pruitt from Tech Republic. Ashley Esquetha. All of a sudden, Ashley turned into Aunt, and Aunt turned into Ashley. Ashley Esquetha, professional gamer.
Exactly alike. We could be siblings.
Siblings, definitely.
I thought you were twins. I did, yeah.
Yeah, twin siblings from different mothers. And, of course, the wonderful Micah Sargent. Great to have you as well, senior editor of Mobile Nations. And our show today brought to you by, wait a minute, hold on, I just have to say hello to Windows. For those of you listening at home, I had to actually duck down behind my computer so that the camera could see me. And
I knew this week's show was going to be awesome.
Because I'm jet lagged. Is that what you're saying? I'm just a little teeny weeny bit. I'm still on Tokyo time. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. I'm happy to say Quicken Loans now the number one lender in the nation. And I have to say, I think we take a little bit of credit for that. Quicken Loans has always been number one in your hearts, number one in customer satisfaction, according to J.D. Power, for the last 8 years running. That's in mortgage origination. They're number one in customer satisfaction for mortgage servicing for the last 4 consecutive years. I mean, these guys are winners. And Quicken Loans ought to be a winner because I just think it's a great company. They've completely renovated, revitalized the inner city in Detroit. Dan Harmon and his team do a great job. And I think that they looked at the mortgage approval process and said, this is a little antiquated. This is straight out of Charles Dickens here, where you have to go to a bank, hat in hand, and say, please, sir, I'd like some money to buy a home. And they say, home? Here's the... Boom, here's your application. You got to go home and get all sorts of information. For us, it meant not only that, filling out this long application, giving it to them, but then they'd come back and said, we need this and that. You got pay stubs from your last job? Fax them to us. And I not only had to find the pay stubs, I had to find a fax machine. This was crazy. Along comes Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans, a completely online mortgage approval process that takes around, well, maybe even less, 10 minutes. 10 minutes. You could do it in an open house. No more paperwork. No more even going to the bank. You don't have to get up from the couch. Just go to rocketmortgage.com/twit2. Answer some simple questions. They have relationships with all the financial institutions. So it's very easy. They'll get the information they need. Crunch the numbers. All this while you're actually sitting there on there, because it takes so little time. They can come back to you and say, look, based on your income, assets, and credit, here's the loans you qualify for. You pick the rate, you pick the term, you pick the down payment, you get the loan. Boom, you're done. RocketMortgage.com/twit2. If you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, Rocket Mortgage is the new and better way to do it. You'll apply simply, you'll understand fully, and you'll mortgage confidently. Go to RocketMortgage.com/twit2. Two equal housing lender license in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030, rocketmortgage.com/twit2. You'll actually save time if you get in there and bookmark it. Oh, he's brought me another Windows laptop. Thanks, John. This one's updated to 1803, by the way. So let me see if I can find the videos for Steve Jobs. It was on this day 20 years ago. It's kind of hard to believe that Steve Jobs introduced the iMac. Now, you got to remember, Apple at this time, Steve had been back about a year. Apple fired Steve, right? So that's the first thing, is he was unceremoniously, shown the door by John Sculley. Well, today, yeah, he did a few things quite well subsequently, including buying Pixar for pennies on the dollar. Let me find this part of the intro. But the very famously, the thing that he did is he went and sat down with the Apple team and said, we have too many products. Remember, this was when Apple was doing clones. They had let other people make Macintosh. They had way too many confusing brands. He drew a plus sign on the whiteboard and said, we're going to make 4 products: consumer, professional, desktop, portable. That's it. The of course, the Macintosh was a desktop. The PowerBook was the laptop for pros. And then he decided, we're going to update the consumer desktop with something that at the time was quite revolutionary. And this is,
show you what this thing looks like.
The iMac.
You got to see this thing in person, but I'll do the best I can with video. This is iMac. The whole thing is translucent. You can see into
Bondi
it.
Bondi Blue, so remember, cool. Named after the
We've
Sydney,
got
Australia
stereo
beach.
Stereo speakers on the front. We've got infrared right up here. We've got the CD-ROM drive right in the middle. We've got.
By the way, we should mention that this product intro was almost killed, according to Walter Isaacson in the Jobs biography, because when Steve first saw this the day before, he said, "What? That's supposed to be a slot for the CD-ROM. What's this button? What's this drawer? John Rubenstein said, well, Steve, you approved that. He said, no, I want a slot. And he almost killed it. And the team was able to get the iMac introduced by saying, well, the next one will have a slot. Is that okay, Steve? So he's looking at that slot right now in this speech and going, but he gritted his teeth and they released it.
Dual stereo headphone jacks.
Wait a minute, by the way, that's weird, but it has two headphone jacks in front. I'm not sure why. And then get ready for this.
The coolest mouse on the planet right now.
Not really.
Nope.
Not even close. He brought Mike Markula, one of the guys he'd fired a year before, but one of the original Apple founders. He brought him in. He was so proud of the iMac. Jobs showed him the iMac, and Markula was impressed. And then Jobs showed him this, the Apple iMac puck. And Markula said, that's terrible. Nobody's going to want that. And Steve said, no, it's the best mouse we've ever made. the worst mouse ever made. And Apple really hasn't improved much on it. I'm sorry to say, I still use Microsoft mice on my Macintoshes. But boy, wasn't that the worst mouse? It didn't fit your hand. Ugh. It was too, if you hold it in your palm, your finger was going off the edge. You couldn't.
Yeah. The cliffhanger.
That's the brilliance and detriment.
Cliffhanger. That's. Look how short the cord is.
Aww.
But it is Bondi blue. All right, let's.
Are, is that the right blue? I don't know. How does it feel?
That was another one I was reading earlier before the show began. I was doing a dramatic reading from Walter Isaacson's book, in which it turned out that the ads that Chiat Day had taken out, the magazine ads for this new. And by the way, let's not forget how awful PCs looked in 1998. I mean, this really was a revolution. Yeah, this was a revolution. But Steve was very particular about the color blue, this translucent blue. And he said, the magazine ad's not the same blue. And Clow from Chiat Day said, no, it's the same blue. No, it's not the same effing blue. And he's yelling and screaming at the guy. And finally, Clow gets him to go look at the pictures and actually hold them up next. And it's the same blue. It's the same. Anyway, let's show some more, Steve. This is pre-turtleneck, Steve. A year later when he introduced the iMac MacBook, he's wearing a black turtleneck and a little bit of a beard. But in this one, he's wearing...
Come on around. All of the connectors,
a white shirt with no tie.
One beautiful little door here, the Ethernet.
Look at the
USB
beautiful
stuff.
Little door.
Around the back, we've got a really great handle here.
Johnny Ives says, there's no point in a handle on a 38-pound desktop computer. Not to mention the fact that it adds immensely to the cost. The case for this alone was $30, which is much more, 10 times more than the PC cases on those other computers. $60 it was. But I've said, I'm going to put a handle on it because it makes it feel personal. And Steve loved that. So you can see he's happy.
The back
about
of this thing looks better than the front of the other guys, by the way. And then around the side. So let's take one more swing around it so you can see. This is what it looks like. And again, you've got to see one of these things in person.
He was such a good salesman. What he doesn't mention is
truly
the big thing missing. Anybody remember what you just looked at it? What was missing from this? It was huge at the time. A floppy disk.
Yeah, no floppy. Yeah.
No floppy. USB ports, which was then pretty early for USB, but no floppy. A CD, a 24X.
That was their removal of the headphone jack, but in the 90s.
Yeah. Actually, oddly enough, this thing has not one, not two, but three headphone jacks. There's two in the front and one in the
side.
That's
where my headphone jack went. Wait.
They took all the headphone jacks and put them in the iMac.
From one extreme to the other.
I have to say, though, and I think that Apple, when Phil Schiller was talking about the courage of taking out the headphone jack on the iPhone, I think he was thinking back to the fact that in 1998, we got rid of the floppy, and we were right. And I think they were right to get rid of the floppy, right?
But Phil, say that. Don't say courage. You know? Like, be like, in 1998, we got rid of the floppy disk, and people thought we were nuts. And now we're getting rid of the headphone jack, and that seems crazy, too. But we feel really confident that the future of, you know, the future of mobile is wireless and blah, blah, blah. Don't just walk out there and say courage.
Courage. Courage.
I'm still hating that whole movement because right now I'm sitting at my desk and I'm digging into my pocket to pull this out. because I have to always make sure I have this dadgum dongle with me.
Dongle.
Because I hate Bluetooth audio on my phone.
Well, you know, I was traveling and I had to make sure that I had I had to have two dongles because the same courage that Apple showed, Google showed with the
right.
Yeah, gosh darn Pixel 2 and no headphone jack there. So I have a Type C dongle and a Lightning dongle.
And kinds of courage.
Different kinds of courage. So
Type
this
C
was
courage
a
courage and Lightning courage.
This original iMac was G3 based. Anyone want to take a guess at the clock speed of this G3?
Was 1.3? Oh boy, that's going to be low.
Oh no, it's about. Say. About 400 megahertz, I believe.
233 megahertz.
Wow. Oh.
Not gigahertz, kids. Back in the day, we had megahertz, and we were happy. We didn't have floppy drives. 512 backside level 2 cache. We had to talk about that in those days. I don't know why. 32 megs of RAM. That was a lot. It went all the way up to 128 megs. I think that was a lot. But remember, this is system,
a decent amount, yeah.
System 8. Which needed all that RAM because it didn't have a memory manager. ATI Rage Pro Turbo Graphics.
Oh,
see, that's what you should have got instead of that NVIDIA card.
I couldn't play King's Quest, though. I don't have no floppy disk.
King's Quest?
I can't put my King's Quest. I can't
you need
play
the floppy.
My Less Manly and Search for the King. No Hugo's House of Horrors. I can't play any of those games.
How old? 20 years ago, you were a kid when this came out, right? You were?
No, I was a teenager.
Teenager. Did you have one?
I did not have, I wanted one really bad. I begged my parents, but my dad, ever the frugal and intelligent man that he is, for my high school graduation, instead of getting me an iMac, built me a computer from scratch with the help of our local PC building company. It was like a PC repair company.
Your dad made you the woman you are today. Right on, Dad.
It lasted me for almost 10 years. And so I can't complain about it. It was a beige box. It was hideous. It was absolutely horrible. And man, that thing just like kept on ticking. So it worked out.
Good.
I absolutely was a kid when this came out. And I can remember we didn't have one at home, but at school, like that little puck fit my tiny little hand just fine. So in like second grade.
It was made for your tiny little hand.
Yeah, it was perfect. It was good at that point.
They should have said
now that. It would be like,
made for Micah's tiny little hand.
Yeah. Steve, you should have known.
If he had only known. You would really? So you liked this? I have one. I don't know why
that
we.
Was nice.
You, as a kid, I did. I think you should wear it around your neck like Flava Flav.
Yeah.
Oh, well, get it bejeweled too, Leo. Make it a necklace and get it bejeweled, please.
Beautiful.
You know what I could
a
do?
A bolo tie.
I could do what Steve did. Yeah. So Steve apparently hadn't yet become the fashion icon. He's got a white shirt buttoned at the top.
Oh, I'm loving this. This
and
is a look.
I think this would actually look really good.
It's a Luke. Yeah.
There you go. It's a Luke.
Wow. It's a Luke. It's, this
if
is,
you get that thing bedazzled with an LL on it.
Oh, that is a good look.
I need to screenshot this.
How much will
right
you pay me if I wear this for the rest of the show?
That's a Bondi blue.
Bolo.
I love it.
This is how
got
Bondi
on the
blue bolo.
This is like in science fiction. They make people wear stuff like this to let you know it's the future. Right?
Wow.
Yes, you're going to be in like the next Katy Perry music video. Wearing
that. Exactly. He must be from the future. He's wearing a mouse as a bolo tie.
A mouse from 1998.
I'm kind of surprised Ready Player One didn't have some sort of tribute to the Bondi Blue iMac. I guess it's it was 1998. It's funny. It's not really not that long ago, was it?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Anyway, happy
I
birthday.
I liked about Jobs. What was, at least it seemed like just Apple back in the days anyway, they always wanted to give it that human touch and just relate to the regular person and not necessarily the big businesses or whatever. And they just kept doing that for each generation after that, you know?
Yeah.
I
always appreciate the fact they wanted to make something that looked nice in your house. That's like my biggest thing. Even now I have a mini ATX case for my Windows PC that I built last year. And it's like, I bought a case that looks nice. Like, I want it to look nice. It has to look good, to be functional. Yep. Like, that was always the thing that I appreciated about
Apple. Do you bedazzle
Apple.
Your cases?
No, absolutely not.
I think I might have the right tie for this occasion.
Oh, my goodness. That's the one.
We found it. I don't know where. John found it. You save every ladies mouse that we ever had? Is that it? This is a...
Ladies and gentlemen who are not watching this episode, you're really missing out.
This is how fashion statements are born.
Yes.
Yeah, is that on Shopify?
Paying attention.
Now, would you have the scroll wheel up or down?
I think up.
Yeah.
I think you got to go up.
I go up, yeah.
Because then it looks like you're going to click on your face.
I might just click on my face, so stand back.
Oh, man.
People just walk up to you and click on it. Would that weird you out? Yeah. You got to be careful about that.
You're
inviting clicks.
Yeah.
This is clickbait.
Oh. I'm telling you, in the future, this is the original clickbait. In the future, everyone. Here's a problem. I got to find something to do with it. There we go, the connector.
There you go.
All right.
Nailed it.
If it lights up, you could put that like a battery pack.
Oh, it does. I'm sure it does.
Yeah.
Does it? Ugh. All right. Well, I'll carry a battery pack. By the way, little PSA. It's kind of embarrassed. Magical. I was sitting on the plane ready to leave Japan, and a very nice flight attendant with wearing a mask, which is a little scary, but they all wear masks, comes up to me and says, "Mr. Laporte, you have to get off the plane." And I go, and apparently I had left two of these, you know, these battery packs that you carry in my in my checked luggage. You can't do that anymore.
Can't do it.
Is that, you knew this?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yep. Right. Let's plug this in. Have it on the carry-on so you can see.
Oh, my God. I don't want it to, like, catch fire. Or something. Please.
Oh, wow.
Now we're talking.
That looks so good, though.
All right. Now. That is a good look. Does it?
It's like Hunger Games.
Yes, that it's very Hunger Games.
Very Caesar Flickerman of you.
I should be in the Hunger Games. So don't tell me, but we're in Japan when Infinity War comes out. Mm-hmm. And I'm sad because I really want to go. You've all seen it, I'm sure, by now.
Yes.
I've yet to see it.
Well, apparently, I had to avoid Twitter because apparently there's something happens at the end everybody's upset about.
Yeah. I've been hearing a lot of that. No one has spoiled it, fortunately.
No spoilers. Even that was probably too much for some people. But
Hashtag Thanos demands your silence.
See, that's a spoiler.
No, that's okay. The one the Russo brothers put out. They were like, Thanos demands your silence. That was the
Oh, that's the silence they demand. Don't tell anybody.
No spoilers campaign. They were don't tell anybody. We want people to be excited and surprised. And I've seen it twice. I enjoyed it. It's not my top five Marvel movies, but it's certainly in the top 10.
How many little, what do they call the little things they show at the end? How many of those are there? Because I like to know I can leave.
Just one, but it's at the very end.
Of course
and also,
it is.
The credits are very long because a lot of people worked on this.
A lot. It takes a lot. That's right. All right. I think
I mean, it's a fun little post-credit scene.
I think I have invented the clickbait tie.
And it is.
Boy.
I have
make sure you get a really nice high-res picture of that so you can make your profile picture.
Okay, it's a good idea.
That's your 2018 headshot. Yeah. That's your 2018 headshot.
Did you put up a Throwback Thursday headshot as everybody did? I felt so left out on Instagram.
I did.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Here, get Leah's back on my Instagram.
You might think I'm stalking you, Mrs. Squetha, but no, I just like your pictures. Let me see if I can find your... Is this it? Oh, it is. Holy cow.
I was at Union Station in Los Angeles.
That's a great headshot.
It was a good shot.
Yes.
I had a crazy haircut at the time, so it was fun.
Yeah. I have my own. This is embarrassing. You want to see my... this is the oldest headshot I could find.
I can't wait.
I think.
Are you wearing a mouse as a necktie?
Practically.
Oh, my God. Suspenders.
Those suspenders.
Polka dot suspenders are the neck. This is 1987.
Game was over.
Your tie also has polka dots on it, correct?
Yeah. It's dots and dots.
Wow.
But they're not reading.
That's very fashion forward of you.
And I don't know why, but it's loosened at the neck like I'm a hard working disc jockey.
Right.
I've been working. Spit some truth.
I probably have my sleeves rolled up, but they don't show in the headshot.
Yeah. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
Love it.
I wish I could get this. Can you give me some...
Need some fabric tape.
I need some fabric tape. Thank you. Ashley knows. That's the stuff I... you know what? My wig tape will probably work. Go
yeah,
get that.
Yeah.
My toupee tape? Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. Great.
I think this is a good look.
It is actually, it's a good look.
It's not bad.
I'm really enjoying it.
And I like the glow that's coming from behind, almost like a Bondi Blue iMac lit from behind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Makes you just want to reach out and punch me. Right in the face. Interesting. Let's take a break and then we'll talk about Cambridge Analytica because GDPR, the European Data Protection Regulation, goes into effect now in just a couple of weeks. And already we're starting to see some side effects, including a lawsuit in England by a U.S. I don't want to say customer of Cambridge Analytica, victim, maybe a better word. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. Our show today brought to you by FreshBooks. If you're a freelancer, I know we've all done it. We've all been there. Where you have to send out invoices at the end of the month. It's the worst. It's the worst part of being... It's wonderful to have your own business. The worst part of having your own business is having to send out invoices. I hated it at the end of every month. Thank goodness, in 2004, I discovered FreshBooks, the ridiculously easy-to-use cloud accounting system. FreshBooks is more now than just getting fancy invoices done, although it does make it really easy. It also makes it easy to get paid faster because... as soon as you're using FreshBooks, you're able to take credit cards as payments on those invoices. And you know what? Your clients love that. They're going to get the credit card points, and you love it because you're going to get paid, on average, twice as fast because it's easy for clients to pay you. FreshBooks does more than that. It's not just invoices. By doing the invoices with FreshBooks, the expenses, because, yes, the FreshBooks app, you take a picture of a receipt, it goes right in the invoice. So it's easy to bill for expenses. It also keeps track of hours. So if you bill for a time, it does that as well. But in the process of doing that, you're also effectively, without even knowing it, doing accounting. So you'll know in the FreshBooks dashboard exactly how much money you've made at any time. Your total profit. You can see what your spending is, your outstanding balances. You can see which invoices haven't been paid yet. You can even automatically set out reminders. Create proposals. They are always adding features. So they've now got proposals, rich text content, images, customizable sections, and request your client's e-signature as they accept proposals. So it's extending its capability even more. There's great FreshBooks app for iOS and Android. They automatically connect to your bank account and update expenses daily. You can use CSV file import for importing in bulk or take a picture of a receipt and upload it. Let FreshBooks automatically do the rest. You can manage team member rates. You know, you may get paid one rate, but your team members maybe get paid another rate. You can manage that from the My Team page. Add team members in different roles so they have different permissions. You can also track income that doesn't come from invoices. Online sales and ads could be tracked by logging them as other income. So really, you're getting all the accounting you need done simply without really doing any accounting. I love FreshBooks. 10 million people, since I started using it in 2004 now, 10 million people use FreshBooks to painlessly send invoices, track time, capture expenses, and get back to doing what you love. Here's the deal. Try it free for 30 days. FreshBooks.com/twit. FreshBooks.com/twit. Try it free for 30 days. And if you do me a favor, when there's a little form that says, "How'd you hear about us?" just put This Week in Tech in there, if you would. The guy in the tie. FreshBooks.com. It's very Hunger Games. I like it. I think that it's gone out, though. The light has gone out. Oh, I know why. I put the adhesive on the light. UK regulator orders Cambridge Analytica to release data on U.S. voters. This is a very interesting, almost a test case. David Carroll's an associate professor at Parsons in New York. He actually tried to get Cambridge Analytica to tell him what it knew about him. Cambridge Analytica refused and told the UK ICO Carroll was no more entitled to make a so-called subject access request under the UK Data Protection Act than a member of the Taliban sitting in a cave in the remotest corner of Afghanistan. Now, come on, there's no need to take that tone. The ICO, however, on Friday, this is the UK Information Commissioner's Office, this is part of GDPR, told Cambridge Analytica in a landmark decision that you need to tell David Carroll everything you know about him, the information you got from Facebook, and failure to comply is a criminal offense. So Carroll was doing this almost as a test case. He wanted an opinion. Now anybody in the United States who wants to know what did Cambridge Analytica know about you as an American voter and where did it get the data and what did it do with it? Who did it sell it to? Just go to the UK Data ICO and thanks to the UK Data Protection Act, you can get that information. That is a very big deal. Yeah. And we're going to, you know, Unroll Me. Remember those fine fellas? The email service. I actually used it for years, not knowing that in the, this was the idea is where they would unsubscribe you from newsletters you'd subscribe to and then automatically send you a summary if you wanted. Turned out they didn't really care about that. They were just mining your Gmail and selling the information to companies like Uber. Well, thanks to the new GDPR, they're closing their doors in EU. They say you can't use us because we can't comply.
Wow.
Can't or won't is unclear.
Ugh.
Did Cambridge Analytica have some type of protocol in place when people were requesting their information and they had to go through a verification or anything like that? Because you didn't want some random Joe calling up saying that they were.
Oh, I'm sure. It. Yeah.
You know,
you're right. As I understand it, he went to the UK Information Commissioner's Office. Presumably they have some sort, I would hope, of protections in place.
It's just the way it was written. It's like they said,
yeah, it's not clear.
You can't have it.
This is from The Guardian. Yeah, that's an interesting point. The ICO said, no, just because you live in the U.S., you doesn't mean you're off the hook. You have 30 days to comply or appeal.
Interesting.
Carroll had applied to the Cambridge Analytica previously and got stuff that was basically useless. He said Cambridge Analytica sent him a profile they'd created about him, but no information about how they created it. They had given me scores for different issues, but I had no idea what they'd based this on. So he decided to go to the British courts. And I think...
Go ahead. Do you feel like a little grateful that...
Yes.
The EU and the British courts have these laws in place, these data protection laws.
Because we don't.
So frustrating that we don't. We talk about this all the time on Twit. Whenever I come on the show, there's always some privacy story that we talk about, some data breach, something like that. And I just, when will lawmakers finally stand up for consumers as opposed to these companies? And the thing is, I feel like they just won't. And it's up to, I don't know, coders, developers. And I find it really interesting that I read this tweet storm, and I you might have seen it. It was a while back, right when the Cambridge Analytica stuff broke, which was, and I apologize, I wish I remembered the name of the person who wrote this tweet storm. It was so good. And he talked about how different verticals in physics and chemistry have had their reckoning with ethics, right? With ethical quandaries where physics had the bomb, right? And chemistry had dynamite and also chemical warfare. Like these are things that chemists and physicists have to think about when they get into these fields, when they're developing things, they have to think, what is the worst possible way this could be used against people?
Yeah.
And that has never actually happened in the computer science industry. Like that has never been a consideration until now. And so will it be that in the future, and that this person who wrote the thread said, I hope in the future and going forward, younger developers will keep these things in mind and actually design products with nefarious intent in mind. What is the worst possible use of this product? Because there's so much kind of starry-eyed idealism in Silicon Valley that it's easy a lot of times for them to overlook sort of the bad uses of their
a little more critical thinking.
Yeah. Yeah. And I really hope that that's the case. And it was such a good Twitter thread. And I apologize to the person who wrote it because you were absolutely fantastic. And I retweeted it all over the place for a while there. And it was a really good kind of indicator as to where we are right now with technology. And will we ever see this sort of moral reckoning happen in that industry? And I feel like it needs to.
Perhaps
you asked that question.
It seems like we're living through that. Oh, sorry. It seems like we're living through that right now. And, you know, I'm sure there were probably people when we were going through things like, okay, you know, the nuclear bomb exists. What are we going to do about that? Hopefully this is the period of time where we're doing that. And, you know, I think one thing that has been good, well, there are many things that have been good about this GDPR thing happening, but one thing that's like made me happy about it is it seems like companies are maybe too lazy or too concerned about potential blowbacks to not just go ahead and roll out these GDPR protections across their entire sort of board. And so those of us in the United States, like, thank God that we're also getting included in many of these things, and we get the benefit of that. If our own lawmakers aren't going to fix it, I'm glad there's someone out there who is, and that we get to reap the rewards of that.
And yeah, a lot of people.
How do we insist to these companies that they adopt those policies without laws having to be passed? Like, how come we cannot, as consumers, demand that these companies hold themselves to those stricter standards for consumers because we are their product in a lot of the cases?
Yeah, although I remember when GDPR happened, and of course, before that, the right to be forgotten, a lot of us were concerned that it might break the internet. That some of these technical requirements that the EU is putting on companies like Google would be impossible to implement without kind of fragmenting. I mean, don't you worry that the internet might be fragmented? I mean, by the way, I'm a little bit playing devil's advocate because I am kind of grateful that we have some privacy regulations. At the same time, is it possible that the just the nature of the internet and attention-based economies means that it's a pipe dream that privacy is just, we're not going to be able to do that. And by the way, it's hard to believe that you're listening to a guy who's wearing a blinged a necktie, but I just saw.
Well, Ant was just saying, what were you saying, Ant? You were saying what it boils down to?
I think it, and I hate saying it this way, but I think of something like Mr. Robot and Daniel Suarez's Demon, where the right people have to get affected before something is going to happen.
Right.
You know, some big wig is going to have his or her data breached, and then they're going to be up in arms and be like, why did this happen?
Yeah.
You know,
did with Equifax, right? And nothing happened.
Like, no, they made money.
Equifax, yeah. No, they made money.
I mean, they didn't, nobody lost money then though. That's what I'm saying. You're going to have to hit.
We don't know. Right. I mean, maybe they did. And you're right. If it had been a congressman's credit card that had been breached thanks to the Equifax breach, we might hear about loss. But I have to say, I don't have any confidence that U.S. Congress can do anything effective to regulate technology. And I still think the jury's still out on GDPR and what havoc that might wreak. Look, see, this is the problem. And here I am channeling Jeff Jarvis now. But this is the problem is the internet does bring us such incredible benefits. There is absolutely a cost, and I don't know if it's possible to separate the two. I don't know if it's possible to create an internet where, you know, the privacy that you're looking for can be enforced, certainly not by governments. I think I like your idea, Ashley, that maybe these companies need to do it themselves.
But I think that privacy as we used to know it is not a thing that we can expect going forward. I understand that there are trade-offs I make every day when I use my Amazon assistant, when I use
I wonder if it's even possible to be private. Yeah.
I know that there are very specific trade-offs for that. Like I get that. And I think going forward, the next generation of coders, users, like will have an sort of, they'll be raised in it. And so they will not think twice about, oh, well, this is a thing where you give up like information that you don't feel is important to you. But I really wish that we lived in a more opt-in society online as opposed to an opt out. So I wish that they would have more stringent rules. And, like Facebook is a really good example of that. You know, when you start your account up, it's all opt in. You have to opt in to all of the privacy stuff. It's not by default. Like, this is the type of stuff that is not difficult to implement. Make it easier for people to keep their privacy intact if they would like to.
Well,
but then also just allow them to opt out.
Let's look at Facebook, because Facebook pays for itself by collecting this information and selling it to advertisers. Mm-hmm. I mean, the other choice would be to have a paid Facebook. Is that going to happen? I don't think so.
I would pay for a Facebook, much like I pay for my iPhone because it's encrypted. My iMessages are encrypted. Like,
yeah, but you're getting hardware with an iPhone.
I appreciate that, but I'd be willing to pay a monthly subscription if I knew my data wasn't going to be sold. Like, I am okay with that. But then you run into issues with socioeconomic levels of people not being able to enjoy a service. Do you say right. that poor people have to give up their data to be able to enjoy a service equally as somebody with money? Like, then it's not equal. It becomes an inequal
situation.
Right.
That's what I was going to say. Because there's so many people out there using Facebook that are, you know, it's their internet, basically, and they can't really afford much else.
Right.
I can't see them paying $10 a month for privacy.
Right.
Yeah.
You know? No.
When Zuck was asked this question,
that's right. Congress asked
when when he was asked this question, he said there will all and this is perhaps a paraphrase, but it's pretty close. There will always be a version of Facebook that is free.
Right.
And to me, that says that they have at least considered making a version of Facebook that is that does cost. If there will always be a version of Facebook that is free, that is a version of Facebook. So I could see this option. And, you know, certainly that the fact that people do use Facebook as the internet, that is a very real thing that we have to keep in mind. But at the same time, this still is a company that has been invented and, you know, brought to life and that people have flocked to. And so it makes sense that we would give people, you know, the different options that they want to have available. And if you cannot go with those options, then there are others available to you that include the possibility that advertisers can pay to market to you, because that's one of the things I think
is
important.
Do you feel like that is disadvantageous to people in lower socioeconomic status? Like, I mean, the thing is a family of four who makes $35,000 a year somewhere, like, that can't afford for all of them to have privacy locked Facebook pages, like, still need to use that service to do things like buy and sell in the marketplace. Like, I have neighbors who constantly are selling things like kids' clothes and furniture and things like that to make a couple extra bucks. Like, they're not particularly well off. And to ask those people to give up their privacy because, oh, sorry, you can't afford it. Like, it's a really hard problem. And to me, the answer is to force Facebook to, again, make things opt out as opposed to opt in. Like, when you log into these services, it by default, you should be much more protected than you are right now.
Yeah, I think that's completely fair. And I think that you're right about that, that, you know, if we're going to go with this version that always remains free, then it makes sense that, yes, you sort of, okay, yes, I do want to turn on facial tracking because I like it whenever I know that someone has posted a photo of me online, as opposed to the other way around.
Or give
it a try. And the fact that I can go on and delete anything that I want to, like, that's what's most important to me. And I want to give an example. I had talked about this earlier in the week on a different podcast, but there's a Walmart that's nearby, and they just upgraded a bunch of their self-serve kiosks where you can sort of go through and, you know, get your groceries, and you don't have to, there's no one there. You just swipe it through and then pay and everything. Well, they upgraded these kiosks to include a webcam that's built into the monitor that's looking at me. And I've gone there a couple times now going, it doesn't tell you what it's being used for. It doesn't tell you where those videos are being sent. It doesn't tell you what's being done to those videos. It doesn't tell you how they're being protected, how long they stay in the system. It's genuinely, like, there's a part of me that wants to track down whoever I need to talk to and figure that out, because are they doing, you know, emotional tracking on me? Are they trying to tie my face to my credit card number and then be able to market to me better? I mean, these are things that we have to think about.
Are they building
going
a
forward.
Shopping profile for you and then selling
I'm
it
sure
to
they
advertisers?
Are
they, are they looking for certain people who they believe might have shoplifted previously in the store? Are they looking for, I mean, there's a million questions, and I think this is where it comes back to, like, transparency is such a problem. We have such a problem in this industry with transparency. These companies just don't want to tell people in plain English, like, yes, like, read your terms of service, your EULAs and everything. But at the end of the day, nobody's reading those. And it should just be a very plain and simple, like, this is what we use your stuff for. We sell it. This is how we do business. Like, I believe that if they are honest about that and upfront about it, as opposed to trying to, like, ooh, it's an uncomfortable conversation that we don't want to have with our users because, you know, that they don't like being spied on. Like, I hate that. Like, it's just be upfront about what you're doing, you know?
Yeah.
It's going to be a challenge. And it's, I saw an article recently that asked the question, which I think is a legitimate question. Can we even survive without, I mean, I've given up Facebook, but Ashley, you said that might be difficult. It'd be a lot harder for me to give up Google, and there's hundreds of other companies that I'm not even on my radar that are collecting information. And frankly, these days, every time I install an app, I figure that company is, besides giving me what the app's giving me, is selling information about me, including location information, to the highest bidder.
Yeah.
Every time, all of the free apps. I mean, there's no other.
That's how they make the money.
Option there.
That's your business.
I guess I'm safe. Am I safe on an iPhone? No, because they ask for location information and I say yes. And after that, you know, Apple at least warns you every once in a while. Hey, you know, this guy's looking at your location every 5 seconds.
Mm-hmm. I deny so many permissions and apps that I install.
But I think that makes you feel good, Ant, but I doubt it's doing anything of value.
Well, that's the thing. It renders them useless most of the time. So I end up uninstalling them. You know, that's isn't that scary? Us. You know,
well, I guess that's the question is we've built up something of great value, which is the internet, based on a model that involves you giving up personal information to support it. This is, nobody would disagree, very valuable. How do we reinvent it and have it not, you know, I mean, is it even possible? I just don't think you can live without it.
I don't think it's a reinvention. I think it's just an evolution that will come with. So I was telling someone the other day about fake news. Somebody, a family member of mine, was like, I just don't understand how we're ever going to
yes.
get away from recognize it, like being fooled by it, right? So, and I said, I feel like, and I have to trust people enough to know that going forward, much like Nigerian prince email scams and IRS phone call scams, like, we will, as a society or as a global society, we will get better at recognizing these things, at combating these things. But it will just take time. It's
would
an
you
evolution.
Mind?
I
would
think
it be
the same as privacy?
If I said, okay, look, Facebook's going to be free. It's ad supported. Part of the deal in ad supported is that we tell the advertisers this information, and they gave you a list of your whatever it is that they're going to sell of yours, and maybe you could turn some stuff off, your age, your demographic, you know, your
which
sex.
Which you can do now on Facebook.
And then
apps.
and then you said, but I agree to this, and this is the deal I'm making. If it were all explicit, you wouldn't be against that, right?
No, and I thought, like I said, if you're upfront about what you're doing, that's fine.
Yeah,
I mean, but my problem is when we're having our data, you know, and Cambridge Analytica is sort of its own thing because it was inappropriately acquired data. And that's a whole basket of monkeys that I don't even, that's crazy. but generally, like, that's if you're playing by the rules, if these companies play by the rules, then you should be able to, as a company, tell people exactly what you're using their data for and say, look, this is how we make our money. Like, we sell your information to third-party services in order to turn a profit. And that's why we can offer you this for free. Yeah. And here are the companies that we sell our data to.
Right.
And here's how you can get a copy of the data.
You'd feel okay with all of that, right? And by the way, that's all stuff GDPR mandates, basically. And the right to erase it.
Email me at the end of the year with from your service with a list of where my data was sold and what you sold to them.
Yeah.
There.
That's fair.
I feel better about it just in general. If I knew where at least where it was going, or if I had the option to know where it was going, I would feel better.
Well, maybe you'll feel better when you see this. This is Facebook's apology ad, which they just recently posted.
Oh, dear.
Oh, boy.
We came here for the friends.
Oh, God, I hate it already.
We got to know the friends of our friends. Then our old friends from middle school, our mom, our ex, and our boss joined forces to wish us happy birthday. Then we discovered our uncle used to play in a band and realized he was young once, too. And we found others just like us. And just like that, we felt a little less alone. But then something happened. We had to deal with spam, clickbait, fake news, and data misuse. That's going to change. From now on, Facebook will do more to keep you safe and protect your privacy, so we can all get back to what made Facebook good in the first place. Friends. Because when this place does what it was built for, then we all get a little closer.
Wow. Here Together is their new...
trying to play on my emotions. There weren't enough dogs to play on my emotions, though. So
yeah, I agree, Micah. Card agree.
I feel like it's manipulative. Even this apology is manipulative.
Oh, absolutely.
It's a great gesture. It's a great gesture. Yeah. But at the same time, all I could think about is the power of the like on there and the way that like just affects so many people and can really screw them up. You know, there are people that are posting things on Facebook and checking for the likes every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Something's wrong there, you know?
Teenagers will post a picture on Instagram, and if it doesn't get 100 likes in 24 hours, they'll just pull it down.
Delete it.
Yep. Because it doesn't look good.
So, I mean, there's other things that we have to consider beyond the whole privacy problem. There's another psychological thing that has to be addressed.
A societal thing that we need to really work on. Much like what we were talking about before the show, right, Leo and Micah and Ant, we were all talking about trolls, right? So like this sort of societal kind of understanding that like that's dishonorable. It's shameful.
Yeah, what I was talking about is in Japan, which is a very, very orderly country, and there are a number of reasons for this, not the least of which is it's a completely uniform country. There's no black people. There's no Hispanics. They're all ethnic Japanese for entirely. But there's also this very strong social pressure to conform. And as a result, there's no littering. There's no I didn't see any graffiti. They have crime, but it's pretty much organized crime. There's no kind of general low petty crime, as far as I could tell. And it seemed to me, now somebody's going to tell me you're completely wrong, but it seemed to me that was really a result of a strong societal pressure that people cared about what other people thought of them, and they didn't want to be, you know, you don't speak loudly in the train, and they enforce that because somebody looks at you and you go, and you just shut up. And that works to me. And Jeff Jarvis has always said this, that's what we need. We need norms to protect us from the worst of the internet, not laws.
Yeah. And I think there is something to be said for, obviously, we are a very different culture than Japan, and for better or for worse. And, you know, some of that is for the better. You know, we are here in the U.S., we're excellent salespeople. Like, kids are taught from a very young age to present themselves, ideas, homework, projects. I mean, it's just a constant thing. And that's something that I know a lot of other cultures look at, and they say, you know, like we talked about Steve Jobs being a great salesperson. This is like a big thing in other cultures. They look to, you know, a lot of Western countries or presentation sales abilities to like kind of put yourself out there. But on that same note, it's like, it's so hard because it's like, we're never going to be that culture. So we have to find a way to do that sort of for ourselves.
Yeah. Well,
I don't know what it is.
I do think that Steve Jobs is revered not only as an innovator, but also a great way to sell steaks. This is South Korea. The
steak jobs.
Steak jobs with a picture of Steve.
It's a franchise.
It's a franchise. And a picture of Steve in a chef's hat with his trademark wire rim spectacles. And for some reason, no apparent reason, a mouse, giant mouse cursor. That's not mine. That's
an app icon. So you got to click on the app.
Click on the
Steak Jobs.
Steak Jobs app.
Cook is calling his legal team right this second.
Yeah. No, I don't know.
A crack A team of legal people with cease and desist out to Korea.
It's not Steve Jobs. It's Steak Jobs. And
Steak Jobs. Steve's cousin. Steve's cousin. They look a lot alike.
Oh, yeah.
Steak. Steve's cousin Steak.
That would have to be his very distant cousin, because wasn't he a vegetarian?
I'd like to meet that guy. Yeah. Let's take a little break.
Speaking out in the public is very rare.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, you were talking, and this resonated with me, about how maybe if technologists thought about the impact of the technologies they created, I would love to see that. And I think we as geeks need to create a societal norm that if you're going to be a programmer, an engineer, a designer, you need to think about how a product will be used or misused. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that came home to me, two of the places we visited in Japan were Nagasaki and Hiroshima, of course. Nagasaki, as they put it, the last city that hit by an atomic bomb. Let's hope it stays that way. Hiroshima the first. And there's very much that sense of technologists need to consider what they're building. And at the same time, Robert Oppenheimer and all the people worked on the Manhattan Project, including my maternal grandfather, worked on it because they wanted to save the world. They wanted to make the world a better place. They wanted to stop the Nazis, and they knew if they didn't do it, the Nazis would, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And there's even a very cogent argument, I'm not sure I agree with it, about why they had to drop an atomic bomb on a city and destroy it, two cities, and destroy them. We met a guy who was a survivor of Hiroshima. He was 13, working in the Mitsubishi Arms plant, and he was there at the Hiroshima Memorial, and he just wanted to meet Americans and thank them. Talk about a gracious person. Thank them. He survived it. He said, "Everybody, you know, it was me and one other guy survived. The rest of them died." He's in his 80s now, of course. He said, "But we were starving, and the Americans came and they brought us food, and you know, it's true that MacArthur kind of remade that country."
Wow.
So it's complicated, I think it's complicated to have a moral compass that says this is going to be okay and this is not going to be okay. It's very difficult. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Ashley.
I found the guy who wrote the thread that I was talking about. Name is Yonatan Zunger.
Oh, I love Yonatan. Oh, yeah, he is Yonatan. Great. A former Google guy. And he is always very thoughtful and intelligent. You can read him on Medium as well. He's really a smart guy. Okay. Yeah. I'll find that thread.
That thread was on March 18th. So he tweeted about it a little while back, but yeah, man, what a great tweet thread.
I had thought really, he left really, Google. I think he's still there, but he's a distinguished engineer working on the privacy team at Google. How about that?
That's
Leah,
good.
You mentioned how there are some people who make the argument that a city needed to be destroyed or a place needed to
save
be destroyed
lives, yeah,
in order to save lives. And, you know, I think that we've sort of brought that up in a very different way, of course, because having a congressman's credit card revealed is not the same thing as dropping an atomic bomb. But in the sense that it does seem like any of these sort of big these things that we maybe don't do enough thinking about. We do have to have these atomic bomb style realizations that take place, these rock bottom moments, in order for these things to actually happen, for the changes to take place that need to take place. And so I don't know if we've gotten there yet. I think Facebook feels like it has, maybe, while they're going through this whole Cambridge Analytica thing. And I am interested to see how Facebook continues to hopefully hold to the promises that it has made thus far, and how that might affect other companies that are, you know, Twitter, Google, et cetera. So we've got, you know, GDPR and then this whole Facebook saga all happening at once. And maybe we're sort of moving through that period right now where we're going to see the changes take place.
I think that's an excellent point, Micah, because you can argue about the merits of, say, dropping an atomic bomb endlessly. The point at this point, having had it happen, is what lesson can we learn from it? And where do we do going forward? You could argue about Facebook's privacy invasions and Cambridge Analytica and et cetera, et cetera. That's done. That's water under the bridge. What lessons do we learn and what can we do going forward to make it right? I think that's a very good attitude. And actually, it is interestingly the attitude of the residents, the current residents of Nagasaki and Hiroshima. That's really their focus, is not ascribing blame or guilt on either side, because there's plenty on both sides, but really saying, let's not have this happen again, and turn our backs on militarism and so forth. Yeah, isn't that that's a big thing to say? Yeah, let's take a little bit of a break. We got more coming up with a great panel. Ashley, you're doing a podcast. What is it called? Streaming. Tell me about this new thing.
Oh, I got a new show. I just launched it. It's called Stream Economy.
Stream Economy. That's it.
It's on CNET's YouTube page only, and it's really fun. We basically kind of did a little bit of a riff on Mad Money, so it's all handheld, and I have a bunch of props. And it's.
I'll turn off the sound and play a little video. This is cute.
This is our promo.
This is so cute. Oh, maybe I'll leave the sound on then.
I'm Ashley Esqueda, and your time is money. But how do you spend it when there's so much to watch, binge, and play? Well, that's what I'm here for. Every week, we're going to talk about what's happening in film, TV, and gaming, and I'm going to let you know whether you should buy
what a good
or
idea
sell
for a
your
show.
Fan investment.
Mm-hmm. Stream
that's
Economy.
That's awesome.
Uses directly.
Congratulations.
Thanks. We invest so much in TV and movies and, you know, all of these different pop culture things, and I really love the subreddit Meme Economy. And so I was like, well, what if we had a show that was like, it was like money. We traded our investment like a commodity, and we would say, you know, buy into Westworld or sell Walking Dead. And so, yeah, we treat it a little bit like a finance show, but it's for your fan investments.
Nice.
And across pop culture. And it's really fun. The very first episode, I took a pie to the face.
Okay.
And then
only
the last
right
episode.
Yep.
It's only right.
Yeah.
And then this last episode, we snuck around at Disneyland and I tried to get into Galaxy's Edge, which I did not do, but it was really fun. And we did some Star Wars Day stuff. So, yeah, it's a really fun show. It's like 10 minutes long every Friday, and I'm having a really fun time making it.
We got a bunch of podcasters here. Micah Sargent, you're doing Integrate, right?
Well, that one's out.
Is that gone? What is your current...
Yeah.
You're still
Lucid
doing,
is my
Lucid,
most
that's
recent
the one.
Podcast.
Yes.
It's a dream interpretation and sleep science podcast. So
love
we have
that.
Listeners send in their
Ooh.
Dreams. We interpret them on the show. It's a mixture of comedy and everything you need to know about sleep and everything that surrounds sleep and how important it is.
Follow him at chihuahua.coffee.
Yes.
That sounds awesome. I'm going to listen to that.
I know. Cool. I want to do. Are you a lucid dreamer, Micah? Can you do it?
You know, I've been able to do it, but it's not one of those things. I think people who are true lucid dreamers, if they say that, if they have the badge and the membership card, it's that they can make it happen anytime.
Right.
Mine is just that I've had it happen in the past. But yeah, I
that's where you kind
of
you're having a dream and you realize you're having a dream and then you have some control over that dream.
Yes, you get some level of autonomy and people, you know, report different levels of it. But yeah, send in your dreams if you have them. And we'd love to interpret them on the show. We always have a good time of sort of mixing some funnier, more ridiculous interpretations and then, you know, the real thoughts that we might have for you.
Aunt Pruitt, also here from Tech Republic. What's your podcast?
I always feel so inadequate.
I know. You need to get a podcast, Aunt. Come on. Although Aunt creates plenty of content. If you go to AuntPruitt.com, he's a great photographer, a master of the drone, and a Clemson fan.
I've been doing more live streams on Friday nights.
Nice.
Because, you know, people want to watch another dude edit photos, apparently.
Oh, I do.
Oh, I need to watch this.
Actually.
Fascinating. Yeah, I love stuff
really
like
cool.
That. It's very relaxing.
You know, I come back. I have 3,000 photos from Japan, and I'm done. I don't want to look at them. I don't want to edit them. But I know no one will ever see them if I don't. So I need help.
Yeah, I started doing some live streams here within the last month, and
nice.
It's been fun. Not necessarily just photos. I've done I did one video tutorial where I took a scene and made it a tilt shift scene from my drone.
Oh wow!
Oh,
ooh, that sounds cool. YouTube.com/ANTPRUITT.
That's me.
Yeah, and you do now the Friday Night Live.
partying it up.
Nice.
I love that. Cool.
See, all that, you're not an underachiever, Ant. You're just getting started. That's all. Our show today brought to you by A Sky in a Strange Tie and my mattress. Let me tell you, coming home last night, knowing my Casper awaits. Didn't take me long to fall asleep, but it probably wouldn't. I could have been sleeping on a rock. It wouldn't have taken me long to fall asleep. But it was so nice. When you travel and you sleep on a lot of different mattresses, to get back to the Casper. The Casper is an online retailer of premium mattresses. I don't even care that they're a fraction of the cost, but they are. They're revolutionizing the mattress industry. And you know how they get the cost down? Not by making a cheaper mattress. No, it's a premium mattress. It's a fantastic mattress by eliminating the middleman. No more resellers, no more showrooms. You save great prices on amazing mattresses. The original Casper, and that's the one we've got, combines multiple supportive memory foams for a sleep surface that has what Lisa says is soft and hard. Just the right sink, so you get on it and you feel like, oh, I'm sinking into a cloud. And then it's firm. Just the right bounce. It's hard to describe until you try it, and it's breathable. So you're never hot. You sleep cool, and it helps you regulate your temperature through the night. These are things you need. Something that gives where it's supposed to and holds you where it's supposed to and keeps you cool. And by the way, you can buy it online easily and completely risk-free because Casper knows without a showroom, you're going to say, well, how do I know which Casper to get? How do I know if I'm going to like it? Well, you have 100 days to try it out. Or should I say 100 nights. Free delivery, painless returns within a 100-day period. If you don't like your Casper for any reason the first 100 days, you call them. They'll come and get it and refund you every penny. Casper mattresses, of course, uphold the highest environmental production standards. Actually, that's one thing I know about Casper, because other mattresses I've had to air out for days or weeks before I even wanted to sleep on them. They smelled funny. The Casper comes out of the box fresh as a daisy. So I know they're doing something right. They're made in the USA, but you get free shipping and returns in the US, Canada, and the UK. Get that Casper today. I'm telling you, it makes coming home, as hard as it is coming back from vacation, it makes it okay, because I know my Casper awaits. Get $50 towards select mattresses right now if you go to casper.com/twit and use the promo code twit at checkout. That's casper.com/twit. Promo code twit to save $50 on select mattresses. Terms and conditions apply. Casper. Just say, I don't know what happened this week. I wasn't here, but I think they made a cheat video for me so I can see what I missed this week on Twit Watch.
Previously on Twit.
Alex Lindsay, let's start with you. What is your pick of the week?
So I'm doing an anti-pick.
Mac Break Weekly.
Years ago, I recommended the NPR app. NPR updated the app, and it is the stupidest idea that I've ever seen anybody do to their own app. I'm never giving them money again. Like until they put the playlist what? Back, they will never get money from me again.
All about Android.
Heading back to Android P really quick before we move on. Material Design 2, we know we're going to see a lot about that. We're already kind of starting to see that. Gestures. Also something called Assistant Slices API, which apparently is surfacing app content outside of the app itself.
That sounds hot. I mean, I don't know what else to say. It sounds great. I'm excited.
I'm sure it does sound hot.
I get really excited about this stuff. And it's like speed dating.
It's Android. Yeah, it's kind of like Android is kind of like speed dating.
Yes, it is.
The new screensavers.
Remember all the mistakes you watched your friends make in high school trying to date people through Facebook? Facebook's decided to make it official. Facebook is going to do dating.
Just give us your deepest, darkest sexual interest, and we'll hook you up with people that you want.
I don't know if that sounds really good.
When a priest says that,
especially after Facebook's news in the last couple of weeks.
Just imagine the wonderful conversations Mr. Zuckerberg will be having with Congress in just a few months.
Twit, bring your brain. We'll do the rest.
Well, so they held down the fort without me. Nice job. Thank you, Patrick and Robert. And by the way, Alex Lindsay on Tuesday complained about the NPR app. On Wednesday, NPR bought Pocket Casts, which kind of surprised me. That's the number two app people listen to Twit with, by the way. It's very big.
I use Pocket Casts. I
love it. iOS, Android, Shifty Jelly out of Australia does it. Yeah, everybody uses it. Well, I guess NPR realized that. It makes me a little nervous, as always, the Shifty Jelly folks, as during an acquisition, people always say, oh, nothing's going to change. We're going to keep the same app. But you got to think that there's a reason. It was purchased actually not just by NPR, but by a coalition of NPR, WNYC, WBEZ, Chicago, and This American Life. And I guess the question it's great if there's, you know, they just put money into it and make it better and better. But you got to think it's going to become an NPR app, not a general podcast app, or at least favor NPR stuff.
Yeah, I think that's certainly interesting sort of assessing. Russell Ivanovich is one of the co-founders of Shifty Jelly. He's a pretty good friend of mine. And talking to him sort of about the rollout of this and how people have responded to it. He put together the FAQ on their site. I think he did a really good job of sort of mixing humor and hopefully, you know, getting people a little chill about everything as we figure it all out. And you know, it's my understanding that they are being as true as they possibly can be to what that FAQ says, which is that things are not changing as they are. And of course, over time, there will come changes, but it's important for them to sort of hold on to that base, and that this is more of an opportunity to, you know, we're continuing to see sort of the podcast industry as it continues to kind of leech into these other sort of startup-y and big money opportunities. We're seeing kind of the base fall away, which is networks like Twit and smaller networks like Relay FM, and these people who are genuinely at the forefront of podcasting, who are, you know, down in the trenches doing it themselves. And that openness, that open nature that anyone can go online and start a podcast at any time, I know is very, very, very important to Russell and the rest of the team. And that is something that NPR, I think, sees, is like, let's keep this an open field and not have these sort of siloed off places where you have like ads automatically filtered in and all the other stuff that can come with some of these different big companies kind of trying to take over the podcast industry.
I agree with Russell and Philip and Chris and the team, but with all due respect, they're not going to have a choice. The company's been purchased. So I understand their honorable intentions, but I can guarantee you NPR did not buy Pocket Cast to leave it exactly as is. That makes no sense at all.
Right.
And of course they're going to start putting stuff in there. I don't know what. That's the question. You know, the good news is just as podcasts are open, so are apps. And if I were somebody like, you know, Marco Arment, who makes Overcast, I would just say, well, here's an opportunity. I think we need independent. See, I think here's what I think is happening. Because iTunes, Apple did this thing with iTunes now where they offer metrics to podcasters. Because really, what's really happening, in my opinion, is, and I know a little bit about this, is that advertisers want to know more about you. Oh, surprise, surprise. What's the biggest threat to podcasting? Google and Facebook. Because they sell your information to these companies. We don't. We don't know anything about you. We don't want to know anything about you. We do a niche podcast. And the point of it is, we can say, well, anybody who would listen to any of our shows are tech enthusiasts. So that's what you're buying. And that's all we tell them. We do a survey, a voluntary survey once a year that gives us some more information, but it's voluntary. It's self-selecting. We don't consider it statistically important, and we don't collect information in any other way. But advertisers want that. And so Apple with iTunes is now doing that. And if you use, the good news is nobody uses iTunes to listen. But what I think advertisers would love, and I know NPR would love, is an app that reports back on you, that tells them what you're doing, what you're listening to, how often, how long, what you subscribe to, where you are when you subscribe, and more and more. And so, you know, I'm sure Russell does not like this idea, but I also know that Russell got a check. and that NPR now owns it.
Yeah,
it'll be interesting seeing how this all shakes out and what I think this coalition is after versus, like you said, these, you know, in individual apps that yeah. still exist.
I know
and
what
still
they're after.
Have a spot.
You know what they're after. we know what they're after. And I hope that Russell got a nice big check. I do. And I think they've done a great job. I love Pocket Casts. And as long as it continues to remain Pocket Casts, I'll continue to use it. It is also my choice for a podcast player. But the minute advertisers start using it or broadcasters start using it, because I know I'll get an email in 6 months or a year saying, hey, would you like to buy we want you to encourage you to tell all your listeners to use Pocket Casts. And by the way, we'll share those insights back with you, just as Apple has done.
Of course.
So, and what I would urge people to do is to continue to use podcast apps that don't spy on you. And as long as Pocket Casts is one of them, it's a good one to keep using. I love it. I think it's a great app, and I'm glad that they did well. Philip and Russell deserve it.
I think I'm the only person that doesn't use that app for podcasts. And yeah. I either use Google Play or I'll use my friend's PlayaPod app. Yeah. I think you met Todd Moore.
I did.
Sometime.
Yeah.
He made a podcasting app, and I've been using his.
Nice.
But I never really think about other apps because I like listening to Google Play for my music as well. And it's all just, you know, right there.
Mostly yeah. what's going to end up happening is that people won't even download shows anymore. They'll just stream them. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I look at people using Echo and other devices like Echo to listen, and that's a great way to listen to shows. Now, of course, I'm sure Google and Amazon are both collecting information if you use their voice assistants, but it's not the same kind. I mean,
and listening on HomePod is not a great experience for those of us who don't want to use the Apple Podcasts app.
Sorry. Is she a greyhound? What is she?
This is Philo. He's an Italian greyhound.
Was he a rescue?
No.
No. He's a sweetheart.
He came from a fancy place in Iowa.
An Italian greyhound.
Yeah, he's about a year old. This is as big as he gets.
They're smaller than regular greyhounds.
Yeah, he's small.
Yeah.
Leo, when are you getting This Week in Pets? Because I will be on there with both of my dogs, and we'll just have Ashley on, of course. And we just have everybody on there, and we can all have our pets on.
I told you, I went in Japan. I went to all the different pet cafes. There's a cat cafe, a dog cafe, a hedgehog cafe.
That's incredible.
An owl cafe. You can't pet.
I can't believe there's a hedgehog cafe. That is crazy.
Pat the hedgehogs. They're prickly. So you just have to look at them. but you, wow. I don't know. Was it Micah or Ann who said, you know, that's probably because pet ownership in Japan is difficult. It's true. And so if you can't have a pet in your apartment, well, at least you can go to the cafe and snuggle.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Apparently for a lot of money, didn't you say it costs to pet them?
Yeah. Yeah. It wasn't that much. It wasn't as expensive as some. I have the price somewhere if you're
what costs more, the coffee or petting the animal?
Oh, you don't go there for the drinks. You can get them and you get one free drink with admission.
You go for the cats.
The cats. Let me see if I can
like a comedy club where it's like you're there to buy a couple of of drinks. Like
yeah,
you have to
two cat minimum. Pets. Yeah.
And you get, okay, got it.
Two pet minimum.
I dig it.
That's actually a good idea. They ought to do that. It wasn't very expensive. And you get a deal if you buy all three or something like that. I can't remember. We bought the day pass.
I like the idea, of you having like a mark on your hand. And so if you leave the pet, I've still got the day pass. I get to come back.
It's a Hello Kitty stamp. It's a Hello Kitty stamp.
Hey, we were talking about Apple supply chain analysts. This one, I didn't notice this, but Meng-Chi Kuo has left. Meng-Chi Kuo is the securities analyst, KGI Securities, who seems to have the inside track on Apple stuff. He's left. He is no longer at KGI. He left on Friday, according to the China Times. So I don't know what he's going to do. Mark Gurman, who knows everything, says he's reportedly moving on to cover innovative non-Apple companies. I'm sure there's a party going on at Apple. Apple, of course, remember a couple of weeks before I left, released a memo to its staff saying, don't leak. The memo was immediately leaked to Mark Gurman. And I think now I'm of the opinion it was leaked to Mark Gurman by Apple because it turns out that all of the incidents of leaks mentioned in the memo were leaks to Mark Gurman.
Oh,
it was. I think now reading the between the lines, you know,
all
they said
coming together.
Employees have been fired for doing this, this, and that. Yeah, fired for leaking that information to Mark Gurman. I think they leaked the memo to Mark Gurman to say, "You see what happens? You see what happens when you get calls? Don't
look what you
the
did.
Irony.
Yeah, the irony of it. Anyway, I'm sure Apple's happy about that. Speaking of leaks. You know, Apple's WWDC is coming up. I think a lot of people are waiting to buy Mac stuff, hoping that Apple will announce especially new MacBooks in June. According
people
to...
People really hate that keyboard, man.
Oh, yes. Do you like it, Ashley?
I don't have it. I am clinging to my 2013 Retina
as you should.
Pro.
Amen.
With all of my might, I won't get rid of it. I won't upgrade it. I'm just, I mean, you can pry it out of my cold, dead hands.
I took to Japan.
Don't want another MacBook.
And I have many choices, including a number of ThinkPads. I took my 2015 MacBook Pro, the last great MacBook Pro.
That's the one I have, and I love it so much.
And it's still fast enough.
So good.
But I dread the day.
I'm using it right now.
Yeah, I dread the day when it fails because.
Oh, I don't even want to think about it.
Let's not talk about that. Yeah, what are you talking about? Fail? It'll be forever.
Forever. Well, according to Benjamin Mayo in 9 to 5 Mac, don't look for a release of a new MacBook at WWDC. Supply chain partners stuck with piling inventories of parts until Apple gives the go-ahead. Actually, this comes from Digitimes.
Piling inventories of keyboards.
Keyboards. They're like, oh, nobody wants.
We should put those in there. There's just a big, giant warehouse of these keyboards.
In other acquisition news.
So much courage, though, Elio. So much courage.
Well, and those keyboards, they fail at the new ones fail at a higher rate. They're hard to fix. If you get a crumb under there, there's no way to get it out.
Yeah, I heard that.
What was the market research for these types of keyboards? Because Apple, they're not the only company making these.
Oh, you see
things.
Them everywhere now.
Yeah.
That's why I own two Lenovos, because they still make not as good as they used to be, but still better than... anybody else with high travel, nice feeling keyboards.
That T-Series is great.
I know. I'm very happy with it. I just wish it ran Mac OS. I mean, Windows is fine.
I feel that way about a lot of things.
But yeah, I just wish it ran Mac OS.
I see a lot of people getting those clicky keyboards. You have one, Leo?
Yep. I have a DOS keyboard. I use that on my iMac Pro at home, and I have the WASM code keyboard I use at work, which I love.
I got my Razer Chroma.
Yeah. Is it a Cherry? Yeah, it's Cherry MX, baby. I recognize the Cherry sound. Those Cherry MX switches are nice.
I've only been muted every time I type into the chat room.
Sounds like a Cherry Red. Yeah, it's very clickety. You can't. I got the Cherry Brown, which is supposedly silent.
Silent.
That's like saying a silencer on a gun is silent. It isn't. Yeah.
No.
At all.
It's quieter.
Just quieter.
I like that. Have you fired a gun with a silencer? Do you know?
Yeah, well, so my dad is like, he hunts and stuff, and so I've been to the shooting range a few times, and I got to use a silencer one time a long time ago, like 10 years ago, and I thought it was going to be quiet, and it was not.
Oh, wow. This is
very surprised by that. No one told me. Everybody thought it was the most hilarious thing, because I was really scared that it made a loud noise.
Does it make a boom, or...?
It's not, it's a loud, it's a bang. I mean, it's a loud noise.
It's not like in the James Bond films, it's not just.
No, it's not like that. Pew, pew. No, that's what I was expecting, and I was very incorrect.
Wow. God. At least my wife won't let me get a gun.
That's movie magic.
My wife has a number of guns. Won't let me get a gun. She's afraid of what I would do with
it. You don't need it. You got Lisa protect you.
Here's a silencer on a Beretta.
5 rounds unsuppressed.
That's without the silencer. Let's jump ahead.
Everyone in the chat room is screaming, suppressor, suppressor, not silencer. Suppressor.
Yeah, suppressor.
It sounds the same.
It's still loud. It's still loud. It's still a loud thing.
So you,
it's
you,
not yeah, it's still as loud as an unsuppressed fire. Like...
So you can't really go around like just shooting people with impunity. I guess I'm happy about that, actually.
Anyway,
I guess I'm kind of happy about that. It should be loud.
It's just, I always see it in the movies and I'm like,
Chris,
it's a convenient fiction for movies because you need a way to shoot somebody quietly. So the guy in the next room. So talking about Apple and acquisitions, Apple, of course, bought Texture, which is a sponsor. Well, they were. I think we just got a message that they don't want to buy any more ads. What a surprise. The rumor was they were going to fold Texture into their news app, and maybe this is starting to happen. They just shut down Texture's Windows app. Still on iOS, still available for your iPad, but not for Windows. The Android app, the Amazon Fire app, and the iOS apps will still be supported. But you have to think Apple is basically going to fade that out and do something else.
Yeah, I was going to say, I can't imagine they'll keep that Fire app for longer than...
You know what? I use Texture. Texture, we should tell people who haven't seen our million ads for them, is kind of like Netflix for magazines. You pay $10 a month, you get 200 magazines. It was created by the magazines, Condé Nast and Hearst and I think Meredith, because it was a great way for them to distribute magazines digitally. They were all in on it. But Apple bought them recently, we think, for around $100 million. Not sure exactly what Apple gets. I don't think it's the app they're looking for, but it ran great on the Fire. It made Fire a really useful little magazine reading tool, right? I don't know. I think I seem to remember, I probably shouldn't say anything, but I think that they said, we're done with advertisements. I think they said that, but I'm not sure. If you hear another Texture ad, then I'm wrong. And that's good news. That's good news.
You're doing something right. If you still hear another ad.
Well, I think, I don't know, but I really think that the Texture, they always said, oh man, we get a lot of subscriptions from Twit listeners. I think we were very helpful for them. As we are for all of our advertisers.
There you go.
Google I.O. is this week. Any expectations? Anybody excited about, will they announce a new phone? I don't think so. Maybe a Chromebook? I don't know. We'll hear more about Android P, of course, the next version of Android. That's what Jason Howell was talking about on All About Android. I'm interested. You know, while I was gone, Amazon announced... a way for end users to program their Echo.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Right? What was that called?
Yeah, new... It's...
It has a funny
this
name.
This is the new skills thing that they did. It's... Hold on a second. Yeah, I was looking at this because I think this is, like, terribly fascinating where you can, like, now do a whole bunch of custom DIY skills for Alexa
Blueprint.
Like,
that's right.
Blueprint, where it's like Mad Libs. You put in all of the information you want it to do, and then it just builds you a little skill. It's pretty cool.
I mean, what I have to think is that Google's going to have a response, right? So this blueprints.amazon.com. Let me play one for you just to give you an idea. This is the website. Create personal skills for your Echo. I won't say the A word. In minutes. They've got one for Mother's Day called All About Mom. Surprise. This is okay. I think this might be a little creepy, but here you go. Surprise mom with a personalized story. You want to hear a sample?
Yes.
You're going to hear the A word here, so we'll just bloop it out.
Open my mom's story.
So, happy Mother's Day. Jack and Olivia created this story, which is all about their mom, Sarah. Sarah was born in Washington a really long time ago. Growing up, she loved to play soccer.
Shady.
These days, Sarah's favorite things to do are play tennis and spend time with her family and dog, Coco. Her favorite food is spaghetti with meatballs, and her favorite color is green.
Really?
Olivia and Jack love their mom.
Really? That's your Mother's Day gift? If I were their mom, I'd go, no.
So
back to the drawing board.
Where's the rest of it?
Where's the cash? Where's the envelope?
My favorite one is the Burns one, where you can like create a roast for friends, and that's really funny.
Open my Burns. Like,
you again? Yeah. Well, as long as you're here, you're my favorite person besides every other person I've ever met. Want more of the truth?
Yes.
A terrible burn.
You out-grinch the Grinch. Still feeling good about yourself? Say bring it to hear more.
Bring it.
You're really funny. Looking, that is.
Oh, Lord. So
delivered with a little more pizzazz.
But that's the point, is that you can customize this. And there is one or two that might be useful. For instance, you can make a custom one for the babysitter or a pet sitter or a house guest. Leash? So here's one for a babysitter.
Open My Babysitter.
Hello, and thanks for all your help today. This is your custom guide to caring for the little one. If you have any questions, just ask. You can ask about schedules, allergies, medicines, how things work.
And so the parent would fill all this in, obviously.
Emergency contacts. He's going to write this down.
Just put it on a piece of paper on the fridge like any other human.
Right. Or text me. I don't know.
You can have one for house guests.
It takes so long.
That's the problem, right? You can have one for a house guest that says how to turn on the TV.
Oh, my Lord. Might as well just stay home and help the guest yourself.
But I like the idea. I've come to a somewhat skeptical point of view, which everybody I know tries to talk me out of, that there is no such thing as artificial intelligence. That everything we've seen to there will be, but everything we've seen to this date is exactly the same as every computer program you ever used before. It's merely somebody writing down what to do when. And that's all this is. They're trying to make out like Echo is some sort of magical assistant, but it isn't. It's just, you know, a bunch of stuff.
You're doing all the legwork.
It's been pre-programmed. You'd be better off just putting it on a piece of paper.
Amen.
AI is merely at this point a marketing term. Someday, I know the world will change, but at this point, you're seeing everybody say, "Well, you go, well, there's artificial intelligence built in." No, it's a it's a computer program. Give me a break.
I agree with you. I think. Statements.
You can try to talk me out of it. I'm not dead set on it. But have you used the new Gmail? This happened while I was gone. Do you like it? Do you care? Does anybody care? Let me ask you this.
I haven't gotten a rollout yet.
You can do it. And here's what you do.
No. I'm just going to wait on them. I'm not going to force it.
No forcing involved. But if you go to your Gmail account and you click on the gear here, I'll do it right now. So I'm on my Gmail account. Sorry, you can show this. There's nothing in it. On the gear, it says right there, try the new Gmail. Try the new Gmail. And so I'm not sure exactly what's new.
Ta-da. On the right side, it's got like your to-do list. Your calendar. Like you can import.
This is the new Google Tasks.
Okay.
Here's Google Keep. Here's my calendar. Okay, that's cool.
Add more stuff. Like, that's nice. Okay, to be able I to like have that.
The calendar that. Access is slick.
It does. It have. It has artificial intelligence, right?
But I think the problem is it doesn't have shared calendars. Like, it's only yours. Like, I think it's only yours.
Wait a minute.
I might be wrong on that.
You're out of storage space and soon will be unable to send or receive emails. What the hell?
That's part of the new. That's a feature. A new feature.
Yeah.
Time to pay that drive.
Wow. Yeah. Not nice. Not nice, Google. Anyway, that's the new Gmail. What else happened? Oh, Twitter. Let's talk about Twitter. Log into your Twitter account and you'll get a little warning, or maybe you'll see it on your email saying, oops. Actually, it doesn't say oops. It should start with oops. It should start with oops. It doesn't. It should say oopsie. So Twitter did the right thing. Everybody does this. They encrypted your passwords when you create a password to your Twitter account. They even salted and hashed it, which sounds like something for breakfast.
Delicious.
But they also kept a log, as they did this, of every user and their password in plain text. So,
thanks, Twitter.
Whoops. Now, Twitter is quick to say, as far as we know, nobody's downloaded this log. But anybody who ever worked at Twitter probably had access to it. And I'm guessing a few people who used to work at Twitter have a USB drive with some passwords on it. Anyway, take this as warning. You should change your password. I didn't worry too much, even though I was, you know, overseas. I couldn't change it very easily because I knew I had two-factor turned on. And that would probably be a good idea. Although, for all we know, right next to the password in the Excel spreadsheet with everybody's password, right next to it is the secret number that is the authenticator. So,
like your backup code or whatever. That's one of the main things. Exactly. Like everybody who's going through right now and updating your Twitter password, if you don't have two-factor authentication turned on, go ahead and get that turned on. And please, if you can, to the best of your ability, try and get a two-factor authentication app, an app that will actually generate the code for you.
Don't do the text messages. It sent
to your, the getting it sent to your phone, we've seen time and time again how people who are very, very clever are good at spoofing things like your phone number and doing social engineering against carriers to be able to get access to those codes. And so it ends up not doing you a good service, especially because companies treat these two-factor codes as sort of a sacred form of being able to tell that it's you.
Yeah.
And so it's important, like once someone has that, then they can do a good job of pretending that they're you, and companies are like, oh yeah, must be you. Let's let you have access to everything. So get that turned on.
And by the way, if you reuse passwords, two-factor ain't going to help you. It'll only help you with Twitter. And so that's another thing not to do. Don't reuse passwords. If your Twitter password's used anywhere else, you now have to change that too. Don't forget. Change it all.
So, Leo, change your cat cafe is my favorite password that you have set up across all your accounts.
Yeah. That's right. I have one password, and it gave me a little red message. Nice. And it said, hey, it's been this might be compromised. You should change your password right away. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, if you're using a password vault, the very first thing that does is it lets you have new, fresh, very good passwords for every account you set up. And most of them will have a security check. I know LastPass does, where it'll say, here's where you've reused passwords. Let's change those. And it will somewhat help you automate the password change. I like it that they warned
you. It's a little inconvenient when you first set it up and you have to go through everything. You take a day, set up a password manager. But it's really been, I mean, I would say it's probably one of the most critical things that I use on a daily basis that I really feel like.
Me too.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Really, that's why a lot of people won't use those password managers, is because of the work that's involved.
Oh, but do please.
It's so unfortunate.
Yeah. And we should mention LastPass is a sponsor. We certainly encourage people to, if not use LastPass, use something.
Yeah. There's a lot of good ones out there. I mean,
I agree.
Take a look. I mean, I'd say there's a good handful of them.
There's plenty to choose from, and there's no reason not to. And yes, bite the bullet and do a little bit of work, because the next time you get one of those emails, it won't be a crisis anymore.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Unless you have 15,000 Twitter accounts and you have to go through and change all of them.
I have to actually decide how
many. Those Russian bots, how many times did they have to change their passwords the other day?
So much work.
It was I'd love to see the graph there of sort of how the political spectrum was changed on that day that they had to go through and change all those passwords.
Yeah. They were too busy.
Fascinating.
We can't undermine America today. We have to change passwords. Too busy.
Maybe it's a conspiracy. Is the CIA doing that on purpose?
No more undermining. By the way, in a completely unrelated incident, Steve Ballmer has sold all of his Twitter stock, every bit of it. I didn't know he had some. I guess this is what he does these days. The former CEO of Microsoft, besides owning the LA Clippers, he bought about 4% of Twitter in 2015, which means his money has doubled. Gosh, dang it. Dang it. Dang nabbit. He sold it all. He said, I still remain bullish about Twitter in the long run. Whether it's an acquisition or something else, he's happy to be out of it. I think that's the case. I sort of
miss having Steve Ballmer in the news. I know. He was always rather entertaining, say the least.
Indeed. Yeah. Developers, guys.
Yep. Speaking of developers, not only Google I.O. this week, but I should tell you our schedule, because we will be – so tomorrow Microsoft's Build Developers Conference starts, and we will be covering the Build keynote live. What time does that start, Carson? Is that 8 tomorrow? 30. What, 8:30?
8:30 in the morning.
And I will not be here for that, thank God. Because 8:30 in the morning is like, I don't know what, Japan time. I'm not going to do that. But Mary Jo, so who's going to be hosting the coverage tomorrow?
That will be Father Robert Ballester and Lisa Schmeiser.
Thank you. That's Karsten Bondi, our producer. So Father Robert and Lisa will be here 8:30 tomorrow morning. You can watch the keynote. And then at 3 tomorrow afternoon, this is all Pacific time, 6 p.m. Eastern, Windows Weekly, because Mary Jo and Paul, of course, are at Build. And so they'll have their thoughts on what Microsoft announced. The next day, Google I.O.'s keynote kicks off things. And I will be here for that one at 10 a.m. Our live coverage begins on Tuesday. That means we won't be doing iOS Today or MacBreak Weekly on Tuesday. We're moving those to Wednesday. And we're moving This Week in Google to Tuesday, right after the Google keynote. Jeff Jarvis and Nathan. Jason Howell. Well, I'm getting punchy. I'm starting to fade. Jason Howell will be there covering that. And we'll be on Twig, I think. Some of them will be on Twig if we can get him to a microphone.
We're going to try to get Jeff on.
Yeah.
Stacy will be on.
Good.
And Kevin Toefel.
And Mr. T, nice, who actually worked at Google briefly. Is that the Greyhound, Italian Greyhound?
No.
Yeah, I heard a
No,
bark
they have really
bark.
Deep barks.
Yeah, like, it doesn't sound like an Italian
it's
Greyhound.
Like loud,
who is that? Is that Micah? Is that yours?
No, it sounded like my dog's,
but
it wasn't.
There's a dog in my house here. There's one is called Kylo Finn, and then there's a tiny chihuahua named Jax. That's who you heard.
Oh, chihuahua Jax.
I thought it sounded like a chihuahua. Little tiny chihuahua. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you ever call him Konichiwawa?
No.
No. I can't. I don't
Leo,
even know how to
out.
Say that.
Get out.
Yeah.
Show's
closed.
Show's canceled.
It's over. I'm going home.
It's over.
All right. Let me do one more ad, and then we'll wrap things up. There's still a ton of news. Sprint and T-Mobile merging. What? I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Snap. Terrible stock results. Net neutrality vote coming up May 9th. We want to talk a little bit about that. California is now the world's fifth largest economy. I don't know. I should do a victory lap. I don't know. Let's take a break. We'll talk a little bit more as we wrap things up with our great panel. First, though, a word from WordPress. I'm very proud of my daughter. Years ago, when she was born, 26 years ago, I bought abbylaporte.com because I knew someday she would want this. She never wanted it. She's just Friday called me in Japan saying I want it. Said, Abby, I'm in Japan. I'll handle this when I get home. But she had just set up her WordPress blog, and I was so proud of her. So that's awesome. If you are setting up a blog, whether it's a personal blog, she wants to put her portfolio up there, some of her best work. That's a great idea. You know, if you don't put your name up on the web, you're letting others control your online presence. No, you need to have a website. If you're a business, twice as important. Every business. It's, you know, it used to be you had to have a Yellow Pages listing or a phone listing. No, you need a website. You need a website. WordPress.com is the place to go. It gives you flexibility. It takes away all the technical stuff. And so you don't have to be a coder or a designer. They give you all the tools. It was so great. Abby was so thrilled. She chose from the hundreds of beautiful templates. She got her site up and running literally in minutes. And, of course, if you ever have any questions, the customer support team is fantastic. They're there, by the way, Monday through Friday, 24/7. And even on weekends, they're there. So you can always get help. If you want to sell something, if you're a business and you sell something online, they have great e-commerce options, including a simple buy button to a complete online store. Plans start at just $4 a month. And when you're ready to expand your online reach, WordPress makes it easy. Built-in SEO, social sharing, specialized plugins. I have the business plan. I use the AMP plugin. Of course, it's HTTPS. You know, there's a good reason why 30% of all the websites in the world run on WordPress. Yours should, too. If you're letting Facebook represent you on the internet, stop. Get your website up. WordPress.com/twit. Create your own website. They'll even help you get a domain name if you need one. WordPress.com/twit. 15% off your brand new website. WordPress.com/twit. We thank them so much for their support. I've been a WordPress customer since practically day one, since the early 2000s. I hope Patrick Delahanty got his baby's name. Patrick, if you didn't register Caitlin, get that name right now, because 26 years from now, Caitlin he's going to come to you and say, hey, Dad, did you register my domain name? Congratulations to Patrick. He's our engineer. He and Svet had a baby boy on, was it Friday, Thursday or Friday? 9 pounds, 7.7 ounces.
Woo! It's a healthy baby.
That's a good word. Thank you, Ashley.
It's a very healthy baby.
Healthy baby. I think they were worried because Patrick was over 10 pounds when he was born. He's a big guy.
Oh, my goodness. Six something.
Anyway, congratulations to a little family announcement I wanted to pass along. How do you guys, what do you guys think about the T-Mobile Sprint merger? First of all, is it going to get regulatory approval? Who knows?
Perhaps.
It's kind of a mystery. You know, it was Tom Wheeler at the FCC who last time, and this was 5 years ago, said that it's not going to happen. But things have changed a lot in the 5 years. First of all, neckties have been replaced by blinged mice.
True.
We are in the future.
That was the first thing that happened.
First sign.
That was the first seal that opened.
Yeah, the first seal.
Mice neckties.
Second seal is that Sprint is practically gone. Sprint. Right? It's kind of almost over. They have huge debt.
The ropes.
They're way behind in quality. This is a good article. Yeah. Mark Lowenstein wrote for TechPinions.com why regulators should approve the deal. And his, you know, the big issue for me, of course, is competition. I like the idea of four big carriers better than three big carriers. But Sprint is no longer a competitor. A stronger T-Mobile would be a good thing. And he brings up the point that we're going to see a lot of competition from Google, from other companies who are going to become wireless providers. Dish, for instance, has a ton of spectrum. So he also says it's good for 5G because it's expensive, and you need strong, powerful companies to make 5G happen. Mm-hmm. And Sprint probably would not have the horses to do it. T-Mobile and Sprint together perhaps would. There's also, this is a very important point, the issue of spectrum. The FCC has been selling spectrum, and the idea has been to make as much money as possible, but that's eliminated participants, including big companies like Google and Comcast, who said, oh, it's too rich for our purses. Yeah. It's just too expensive to buy this spectrum, and that we maybe need to solve in some other way.
Well, they just want someone else to build it, and then they just piggyback on it.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, Google, like, that's what they ended up doing.
Someone else just build it, and then we'll swoop in and
buy
it
Google
later.
Fi. Dish, though, did buy a lot. Yep. Dish did buy a lot. May 9th, the Democrats are hoping to get Congress to vote on a new bill that would overrule the FCC with net neutrality. We're all hoping they get to. You might want to write your member of Congress. They've probably heard a lot from you lately over this. They've got to get enough signatures. Well, actually, I guess they had enough. They do. They have enough signatures on a petition. And it looks like Ed Markey has introduced a formal Congressional Review Act resolution of disapproval. Democrats will force a floor vote to restore the rules on May 9th. It's kind of a last-ditch attempt to save net neutrality. Still, we got a long way to go, including if any bill would have to get a signature from President Trump, which seems unlikely.
Very unlikely.
So it ain't over, but just keep writing. And of course, California has its own. Many states now are talking about their own net neutrality bills. Mm-hmm. Apparently, New York is now getting into the act as well. Anything else we should Flipkart? Amazon was trying to buy it. It's India's Amazon, in effect. Looks like Walmart has put together a deal to acquire Flipkart for about $15 billion. Stealing it, snatching it. And by the way, Google will be involved in this as well. They're one of the partners. Snatching it out of Amazon's hands. Don't know. That probably means more to people in India than it does to me, but
I think Amazon has other stuff to worry about.
Yeah, no kidding. But Amazon's big problem right now is that they don't have a good international presence, do they? Alibaba and others are beating them. And India's a big economy with a lot of customers. I'm sure Amazon would like to have.
It's a big coup for Google.
Yeah, they'd love to be there, of course. Yeah. And finally, we have a new cyber commander. So the Pentagon has elevated their cyber warfare unit, and in charge, Lieutenant General Paul Nakasone. He will be also the head of the NSA. It's a dual leadership role. He is now leader of U.S. Cyber Command. On Friday, it was elevated to an independent unified command, according to Reuters, a bureaucratic change that for the first time puts it on a par with 9 other U.S. warfighting commands. This is an acknowledgement, according to Deputy Defense Secretary Patrick Shanahan, that this new warfighting domain has come of age. Here's a little scary rhetoric from the Deputy Director of the Cyber Command. We are ready to unleash our cyber mission forces. This will be defensive, but it will also be offensive. Nakasone, the new director, appeared to favor a more robust response to cyber attacks, such as those by Russia in March, when he testified at his confirmation hearing. Our adversaries, he said, have not seen our response in sufficient detail to change their behavior. They don't think much will happen. Cyber Command includes military units trained to both defend against cyber attacks and to initiate them.
I'm really disappointed that these aren't like anthropomorphic light beams or something. It's like something called Cyber Command. Yeah, yeah. It needs to be cooler, not just actual human
this
beings.
Is the voice of Cyber Command.
Yeah, right. We deploy them and they just like shoot out into wherever they need to go and fight.
It's fight a new kind of warfare. And we've already seen how disruptive it can be just with the Twitter and Facebook stuff that Russia's done. I think get ready. This is going to be pretty ugly. And I'm not sure.
I mean, this is a long time coming. They should have elevated this to.
I'd agree defensively.
Defensively. I don't want to see this. This is something that should have been elevated equally to other arms of the, military command.
But I don't want to see it as an offensive force. I think that's a big mistake because it just escalates.
What exactly do they mean by offensive? I mean, I mean,
start attacking other people. I don't want to see us in that business.
I don't like that.
I don't love it.
That may change my perspective on them.
Yeah, but and up until that point, please, can we not be offensive? Let's just hang out and keep ourselves safe.
Well, we've seen it, and it didn't work well. Remember Stuxnet, which was, I think, the Israeli, maybe some help from the U.S. Attempt to shut down Iranian centrifuges to reduce, to keep them from enriching uranium. And then, it got out, and it impacted us all. We've seen the NSA hacking tools leak out to our detriment. I don't know if I want our government to be in this business. Defensive, fine. Protect our grid, please do. Mm-hmm. That's a great idea. I'm not sure I like the idea of them creating super weapons, cyber weapons. This can only end in tears.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Or the next James Bond movie.
Both. Yeah, both.
Why not both?
Yeah. Now, if Guillermo del Toro was running the Cyber Command, I might. No. Hey, I want to thank you guys. You're great. Thank you for propping me up. Miss Ashley Esquetha. You must follow her on the Twitter and on the Instagram at Ashley Esquetha on the Twitter, Ms. Ashley Esquetha on the Instagram.
Instagram will probably never give me my original username, Ashley Esquetha, back. So, it's Ms. Ashley Esquetha.
I like it. I'm Mr. Laporte. Good to have an honorific.
Yeah,
and
that's nice.
Don't forget her brand new show launched on YouTube on the CNET channel. Spectrum Hunting? What is it?
Stream Economy?
Stream Economy. I don't know where I got Spectrum. Remember...
We're talking about 5G.
Stream Economy. By the way, it's like 11 in the morning in Tokyo. There's no excuse at all. Stream Economy.
Be fully awake.
I'm going to use this excuse for the next 4 weeks. Be prepared. Thank you, Ashley. It's great to see you again.
Happy to drop by.
And your lovely Italian Greyhound.
That's my little baby Philo.
Philo. Named after Philo T. Farnsworth, the inventor of television?
Correct.
You are such a geek.
Such I know.
What a great name.
I love television, and he's a good Philo.
It's perfect.
Yeah.
You should have a cat named Farnsworth.
I almost named him Farnsworth, but then.
That's pretty good, too, but it sounds affected.
He seems like a Philo. It's like Milo, right? It's a it's a cute dog name, but it's a dorky version of Milo, right?
And there you go. Yeah. Philo means love, right? It's the Greek word for love. I think that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. You love your Italian.
He's a very loving dog. He's a little, we call him a snuggle boy. Like he's like a little kissy snuggle boy. He's really sweet.
Nice.
Oh. Again, we got to have This Week in Pets.
Well, I think we just did.
My Italian greyhounds have their own Instagram. It's Iggy Brigade, I-G-G-Y Brigade. And I put pictures of them up all the time. I have three Italian greyhounds and they're very photogenic.
I am going to unfollow Miss Ashley Esqueda.
Yeah, don't follow me.
No more stalking Ashley. I could stalk her greyhounds. Oh, look at the Iggy's.
I'm trying to make them famous so I can retire.
Bailey, Jenkins, and Philo. Aww.
They're so cute. The donut. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Okay, I'm just going to say they seem over alert.
Well, they hide a treat there.
Okay. I worry about dogs that are over alert. You know what I'm saying? What? What do you want? What? Huh? What? Huh?
That's pretty much how they are all the time.
Huh? What?
Hey, what are you doing?
Are you talking to me? What?
That's our old lady, Bailey.
Oh, hey. Oh,
yeah. Old lady. Hi,
that's Bailey. Hey. Ooh. Aunt Pruitt, always a pleasure. Tech Republic, follow his new Friday night feeds on YouTube, youtube.com/Aunt Pruitt. And anything else you want to plug?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me again on this network. It's truly an honor.
And you always say that, and I feel funny about that. Of course, it's an honor for us to have you.
But yeah, just you can follow me on YouTube, youtube.com/AntPruitt, and also Aunt Pruitt on Instagram. I have my dogs on it every now and then. Just look for Kylo Finn. That's his name.
Such a good
Jax
name.
Is in there somewhere.
Such a
but good yeah, name. Definitely come check me out on YouTube. I'm having a little more fun with that over there. And on either platform, I try to engage everyone that comes over there in comments and whatnot, because I think social media should actually be social.
Yay.
Amen.
Yay. And by the way,
agree.
I still haven't bought another drone, and everybody who makes drones should be happy.
Well, by the way, it seems like every time you have a sponsor, they get into my pocket. So you're doing something right.
That's good. Maybe I should get a drone sponsor.
You know, I had wine last week.
Did you try that wink? Isn't that good stuff?
Know, yep.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah. And thanks so much.
I'm going to have Casper here soon.
You're going to have a new mattress. Life is going to be
every time same.
But we'll know that you've really fallen into the pit when you start rocking the mouse bowl.
Oh, I already ordered one on eBay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I should.
Are you guys selling those on an Etsy store?
I should get an Etsy store going.
There you go.
I like it. I think it's a look.
It is a look. It is a choice.
It's a clear choice. We thank you so much, Micah Sargent. Always a pleasure to have you on, senior editor at Mobile Nations, where he works over there with all of our friends at Mobile Nations, like Ren, Renee, and Serenity. Yeah. Oh, yeah, it is Ren.
In Georgia.
In Georgia. So yeah, nice to have you all.
Folks.
All right.
All those guys.
We do Twitter.
It's nice to formally meet these folks. I've never met Miss Ashley or Micah in person here.
When they told me that this was going to be the panel, I said, oh, that's going to be great. That's going to be fun.
Yeah. Fantastic.
And I was right.
A fun panel.
And you're all dog lovers.
What they didn't tell me is that I would invent a new form of neckwear during the show. They had no way of knowing that.
Had I been told about that, I would have just skipped out. I'd have been like,
by the way, I just want to point out
I can't make it
that the original iMac mouse makes an excellent pocket square.
Oh,
or I'm thinking maybe a belt buckle.
You know what? Can I say eye patch?
We need to make that happen.
It's a great monocle. It looks like a monocle.
Massive failing as a monocle. You can't see through it. But then again, it had many massive failings as a mouse. That shouldn't stop anybody.
It's translucent. I feel like you could somewhat see through it if you really wanted to.
I say. Thank you all for being here. We do
Twitter.
Oh, dear. You know, the best thing about monocles is when you hear a surprise, you can go, ah, what? And they could pop out. We thank everybody for joining us. We do Twitter every Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time, 2200. No, 2300. Oh, no, I'm confused. I can't do math. 2200 UTC every Sunday evening. Please stop by. Join us. If you can't be here live and in person, you could. By the way, if you want to, we had a great group. Andrea, who always comes out for Google I.O., brought a bunch of developers from Europe. Andrea's from Spain. And where else are your friends from? They're all shy. Are they from Madrid? All Madridians? Okay. The Madridians are here.
They know how to pronounce my last name. No problem.
You notice, by the way, I got it right every single time, Ashley. I've been practicing all week.
Good job.
Esquetha.
You did great.
Esquetha.
Yep.
We had Taylor from Atlanta, Georgia. We had Lisa from Pasadena. We had Alejandro and Ivan from Madrid. We have Graham from formerly of York, England. Nice to have you, Graham. And also from England, Amanda and Ruth from Chelmsford and Warwick, respectively. And Robert from Maryland. So there were people from all over. Email tickets at twit.tv. We'll make sure to put a chair out for you. If you can't watch live or stream live or join us in the chat room live at irc.twit.tv, you can get on-demand versions of everything we do. Subscribe in podcasts by all means. By all means. Or your favorite podcatcher. Or just go to twit.tv and download a copy of the show. Audio and a video are always available. Thanks for joining us. I'll see you next time. Another twit is in the can. Bye-bye.
Doing the twit.
All right.